Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, I love it when things are working. So let me just knock on some wood here. Oh, Marco says good afternoon. I said good morning to him. I keep forgetting that he's in the Netherlands and the time zone's a little different. Well, all hell broke loose yesterday. The website wasn't up. Got about an hour and a half into the show. I had a fabulous, you know, world-class guest in Naomi Wolf coming on at 9, and the website wasn't alive till 8:35. Josie had an abbreviated 20-minute report. And I invited Dr. Judy Mikovits to call in because I had a feeling that those two hadn't met, and I just thought it'd be fascinating to get them together and see what happened. And it was absolutely fascinating. So check out the show from yesterday. That was groundbreaking. That was just amazing, and I'm sure they're going to work together in all kinds of different ways, which will be amazing also. All right, let's get to Bill because we only have half an hour, and here we go.
On Tight Action Radio presents the Fetke Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. Greg Penquisit, how are you?
You're going to run out of names one day. I'm just going to wait. I'm just waiting every week to say, what's he going to think of this time? I'm doing really well. Like I say, I'm really happy things are working. Blog Talk fixed their glitches, whatever they were. But the only thing I don't know is whether we get 3 hours exactly or a little bit of overtime, because I like to play my announcements at the end of the show. And a lot of times the end of the show is like a little bit later. But it's just, you know, things are going so great here. We had Naomi Wolf and Judy Mikovits yesterday. I've got Jason Shepard on Thursday. I've got Jen McCarthy, who wrote a book with Pierre Corey, the doctor, great COVID doc. Today, Biakovar Creek has a person I haven't met, but I think is going to be amazingly helpful, Steve Stern. So Steve Stern of the Flag Shirt Company. And so we're going to talk to him in the third hour. So all in all, we're going gangbusters. How are you doing?
Just wonderful. We got a lot to talk about today, obviously. There's a lot of stuff going on. We got Speaker of the House vote today. But I want to start off with a question, and this is on everyone's mind that we have to get resolved right now. Are you ready?
Yeah, but you're really quiet, so I don't know if you can get closer or boost
is this
or
any
do something.
Better?
A little bit, but
yeah,
you're always a little quiet for some reason. Yeah, and if I turn you up, then I get really loud myself. So there's a difference in our volumes, but just give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So why is there a thing called grapefruit when there is a fruit already called grape?
That's a really good question. Why is there breadfruit when you don't bake it? I mean, I don't know. I don't name these things. You know,
so
you
do want to start off today.
I'll
kind of stream into my phone here. I just want to start off today with a shout out to Marco Rubio's office. Uh-huh. They started something that, you know, for once, social media actually was a good thing. Mm-hmm. DC Drano, who we've talked about many times on this show, uh-huh. You know, they're based out of Florida here. They started posting for this 24-year-old Navy vet who was discharged from the Navy after taking the COVID shot because the COVID shot gave him myocarditis.
Mm-hmm.
And they refused to give him benefits.
No, they have to. They made him take the shot. Well, and the funny thing is,
well,
the shot
exactly.
was illegal. So,
so DC Drano got a hold of this, got in touch with Marco Rubio's office. They started a huge social media campaign, and then everyone got on board with it from Congress, and this 24-year-old vet now has benefits for the rest of his life. So shout out to Marco Rubio's office.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Where was Marco Rubio when the mandates were created? Where was Marco Rubio to say this is unconstitutional? You can't do this. Where was Marco Rubio to say, where are the steps? Why are you doing this? What's in the vaccine? Is it, in fact, a vaccine, or is it a genetic-altering drug? You know, there are all kinds of things that Marco Rubio didn't do. So yes, he's late to the party and he did the right thing. But the problem was we all were talking about this 3 years ago, that you don't need a vaccine because we already had cures for COVID. The mandates were completely illegal. In fact, I have a friend that's been on the show a few times about this who refused a jab and got kicked out of the Marines. And so this is, but they can't order. It's federal law. You can't order an experimental use authorized drug. You have to make it voluntary. You know, people have the right to take it or refuse it, and they have to be given alternatives. That's right in federal law. I can pull up the law if you're interested, but yeah. So all these mandates are
illegal. I'm not doubting it. I just wanted to give a quick shout out.
Shouted more.
Because we have,
I just wanted to extend
instead of always bashing people, have to give them credit where credit is due in order for them to continue doing the right thing.
Well, that's very true. And I try to give credit, you know, whenever I see credit out there. But in this case, you gave him credit, and I said, okay, here's what you should have done. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, but let's talk about last week's timeline. Because last week's timeline is really and it kind of fell into yesterday also, what was yesterday? Yeah, Monday also. Mm-hmm. So on Tuesday, Jim Jordan was named as a front runner for the Speaker of the House. Jim Jordan has always said that he will not fund Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday, Hamas attacks Israel, as we all know at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, I'm watching some news. On my Saturday morning, I usually catch up on the news for the week that I missed. And one of the reports when they're talking about Hamas was obviously Iran funds them. Biden gave Iran money, therefore Hamas had the money to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But what they decided to throw in there was Russia may have helped fund Hamas.
Oh, of course, which is hysterical. And I saw that on Newsmax. Yeah, some Newsmax idiot.
Yeah.
Well, what about Russia's involvement? I'm like, what, is this your talking point? And did Chris Ruddy tell you to do that because he hates Trump? You know, what? You know, it's like they can't let go of Russia, except the left loves Russia. They loved it when Stalin, you know, killed all the people. They loved it when Lenin walked in and assassinated the Tsar. They love that kind of stuff because they're leftists. Hey, power to the people, baby. You know, so this is a bunch of nonsense.
Well, I mean,
when the left condemns Russia after giving 20% of our uranium to them, which Hillary did, I'm just laughing. Anyway, go ahead.
So this is not about the left or anything. This is about globalists. And this is about perpetual wars. And the fact that we had a speaker who was going to cancel Ukraine's funding,
mm-hmm.
the globalists now have, obviously they've owned the media for a long time. Now they're telling the media, hey, throw Russia into this so that America will keep backing Ukraine. And that's what this is really all about. Then you have Miss Globalist herself, Nikki Haley.
They don't back Israel. We know that.
Yeah. So we have Miss Globalist Nikki Haley comes out Monday saying America was attacked. We need to finish off Iran. Well, first of all, America was not attacked. It was Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so for us to jump into this at this point is very foolish. And let's not forget, Israel attacked our warship back in 1979.
What was that one called?
Okay.
No, I remember that. What was that warship called? Because I remember it. I remember the story. There's three famous ships, you know, the Mayaguez, the Pueblo. The Mayaguez Ford rescued the crew. The Pueblo got taken by North Korea, and they stayed there for years. And then there was, what was the ship? The Independence or something? What was it? I know what you're talking about.
I had it in my mind earlier today, and I completely forgot what it is.
Do you know why they did that? Was it a mistake, or was it that we weren't close allies at that point? What was the reason for it? Do you remember that?
Hey, Greg, I need to I don't remember. I need you to talk for 1 second. I need to do something real quick.
Okay, just mute yourself. All right, me talk for 1 second? That's easy. Anyway, just to promo today, we're full. We've got Wendy Arthur with the Oh My God Report at the bottom of the hour. We've got to the top of the next hour. We've got Bonnie Nesbitt with the B word. So Bonnie's got a whole report. I gave her a ton of things to look up. And Bianca Von Krieg, our progressive reporter from the West Coast, well, not ours, is, you know, joining the show here. She's actually running for office right now, so it's quite fascinating. Is bringing Steve Stern.
That.
And so to have a progressive, you know, Bianca bring, you know, conservative Steve Stern to the show, I really want to know how these two met. But Mike Lindell's involved in it, too. So it's going to be an interesting hour. All right. Back to you, Bill.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Okay.
We just have some issues going on that I had to address real quickly.
Yeah, that's okay. Hey, listen, I mute my phones. I mute myself, you know, constantly when things happen. Usually when I'm sneezing halfway across the room. But anyway, that's another story.
Yes. So let's go back to Miss Globalist Nikki Haley. You know, she came out and, you know, said that we need to finish off Iran. So here we go. You know, there's only, you know, there's only two countries, I believe, left, maybe three countries left that don't have central banks. Iran, Russia, and I think there is one in Africa that still does not. Once again, my mind has slipped me, and I apologize.
Okay.
I had a
lot of times I do that too. I'll think of things on the show. You think, gee, I should have looked this up. But you know, until you get there, you know, people don't realize how spontaneous we are. Now, Russia is a centrally controlled economy and has, well, at least it was, you know, from the Tsar was central controlled. The monarchy held the treasury. Under communism, there was, you know, the Communist Party was the treasury. So, you know, and they confiscated everything and destroyed what they didn't confiscate. So to not have a central bank in Russia is not a big surprise. But you're saying that China does have a central bank, which is interesting because they're communist also.
Well, yeah, because if I'm not mistaken, aren't they, you know, of course, they're the head of the UN, which is controlling all of this right now. But, you know, but Russia does have technically they have a central bank, but it's run by Putin. It's not run by the globalists. So that's why they're mad at Putin.
Yeah, Putin's really interesting character. We should do an in-depth study of Putin because he's always been made the demon. I don't think he's anywhere near as evil. I think he's he's a Russian nationalist, and obviously he's power hungry and loves it. But I don't see him setting up gulags for his people. I don't see him, you know, doing a concentration camp thing like Stalin. You know, I don't see him invading countries like Hitler. You know, he's going taking part of Ukraine that the Ukrainians want anyway because they don't want to be associated with Ukraine. So it's really quite fascinating what's going on. But contrast Ukraine and Israel. You know, they want the war in Ukraine. And why is Nikki Haley talking about a war in Iran when we're basically funding Iran and giving them the nuclear weapons? That you know, that makes no sense. They want a strong Iran.
Well, it really doesn't make any sense.
They don't
and
want to attack
I
Iran.
I think this is a twofold thing. The first fold is that she's running for president, so therefore she's got to make some kind of comment in support of Israel. So her comment is, let's finish off Iran. The second part is that she is a globalist, so if Jim Jordan does get in as speaker, the funding no longer goes to Ukraine, so the funding needs to go somewhere for the globalists to survive. So let's reallocate it all and let's go after Iran.
Now, that doesn't make any sense, though, because we just gave them $6 billion to invade Israel. You know, they left. In fact, I put a post on last night on Facebook that since the Obama and Biden had surrendered in Afghanistan on purpose to give $85 billion worth of our weapons, you know, to Muslim terrorists, they just gave $6 billion plus billions more over the years to Iran to fund terrorism. Why don't we just hand over Obama and Biden to Israel as war criminals? Because that's pretty much what they are.
Well, yeah, that's what they need to be, because you figure $6 billion went to Iran in cash that Obama did admit to his last day in office.
Right.
The
flying in ones? The pallets of cash?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Biden just did the same thing. Of course, Hamas has all the resources that they need. They were given all this money. They have everything they absolutely need to go after Israel. But once again, they just don't realize, and I don't think Biden and Obama realize, is that Israel has more money than Hamas still, and they could wipe them out at any time they wanted to. The Palestinian quote-unquote state would not exist if Israel had no heart. But Israel has a heart. They allow them to coexist.
They're kind of stupid. Let me give you my one state solution real quick. Israel has to do three things: take Gaza, take Golan, and take the West Bank, and make them Israel. That's my solution. And if people don't like that, then go live in any one of the other Arab countries, which are, you know, 100 times larger than Israel in total area, and most of the Palestinians are from Jordan anyway. So you go back to Jordan. But the West Bank
has
to become Israel.
Palestinians came from the Ottoman Empire in Turkey, and
right.
they, they migrated into Israel.
Yeah, but
so if you want to talk about going home,
yeah.
Yeah, there is no Palestine. There never has been. If Palestine wants a home, go back home.
Yeah.
You know, Israel is not your home. It never was. And on top of that, if Israel really did not want Palestine there, they would have wiped out that mosque that sits on the Temple Mount.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, and there are plenty of Palestinians living in Israel peacefully. There are plenty of Muslims living in Israel peacefully. So the question is, and this is the choice that you should give the people in Gaza, Israel should give them. You have a choice. You can become part of Israel, as we're going to take it over anyway, and you can live peacefully, as other Arab Muslims do in Israel and are quite successful. Or if you're going to be a militant terrorist, you're out of here. You're going to go somewhere else. And we'll find out, we'll see. That's going to be an interesting part, is because the other Arab countries, they don't want the Palestinians. If they did, they'd take a section of their country and declare it, a state, have their own state. You could take part of Egypt. You could take part of Jordan, part of Syria. You could take part of Saudi Arabia. It's huge. So make that Palestine. Go there. but don't stay next to Israel on Israeli territory. That's my solution. The one state solution.
Well, and they're really, at the end of the day, there is only going to be a one-state solution, and I don't know if this is going to be the time or not. But the one thing I always found very interesting, anytime Hamas attacks Israel, Israel retaliates, everyone jumps on Israel, and then all the politicians, they go meet Netanyahu. They never go meet with the Hamas.
Plus, because they get killed.
Leader.
They're not stupid.
Well, yeah, but it's always Israel that has to start the peace talks and cease fire, while Hamas keeps launching weapons at them all day long.
That's the first thing that the branded insurrection said. We have to have peace. We need a ceasefire. No, you don't, you stupid idiots. You need to go after Hamas and get them out of Gaza. This is just stupid what they're talking about. Yeah, they're always calling Israel, and Israel always has to give up land. No, if you want land for peace, Israel needs more land. More land for Israel means more peace. Gaza, Golan, and the West Bank. You make those, Israel takes those back, makes them part of Israel, defends them, puts up settlements, and makes them, and gives them a choice. Stay as Israeli or get the hell out. That's how you do it. Hey, Pianki, you want to get in on this?
Yeah, I want to know when... New Yorkers is going to have Akeem Jeffries denounce his uncle Leonard. Kwame Jeffries, when he's going to denounce his uncle Leonard, who's anti-Semite. And Black Lives Matter, who support Hamas. And NFL and NBA players, they support Black Lives Matter.
Pianki, did you hear Amari Stoudemire's rant over the weekend?
I didn't hear it, but I can imagine what it was.
It was the most beautiful thing that I maybe have ever heard from an NBA player. Amari Stoudemire went on his Twitter. For those of you who don't know, he used to be the center for – I don't think he's playing anymore, but he used to be the center for the Phoenix Suns. Amari Stoudemire, very good player. But he went on his Twitter account, I think it was Sunday morning, and said, "Hey," or Saturday morning, something like that. And it's like, "Hey, I woke up and I see all these women being killed, all these children being raped. And yet here's Black Lives Matter keeping their mouth shut." I mean, he used some explicits in there. But keeping your mouth shut, saying that you need to investigate this more. What is there to investigate? You got women and children being dragged through the streets on video, and you won't denounce it. Who are you really for? And he went off on Black Lives Matter. He went off on the Democrat Party. Went off on Biden. I mean, he went off on everybody. It was one of the most beautiful things that I've ever seen come out of an NBA player's mouth.
Why don't you post that speech?
Look at the suffering that Kyrie Irving done. Received because of his statements from the ADL and what's the other Carnet, not West, but the other rapper. You know, I've lived long enough to see atrocities from both sides. But I'm not going to get into that today because Greg ain't got – I really don't want to get into that. But what I'm saying is, just like you say, the NBA, the NFL, and other entities in Major League Baseball, they was all supporting Black Lives Matter. Matter of fact, the NBA gave him $250 million toward causes like that. Now where are they standing today? You need to remind them of that.
Exactly.
I don't see much. I don't hear much from Black Lives Matter. They bought their mansions. They've got their money. They're probably already retired at 32. You know, so they don't have to do anything else.
Black Lives Matter, Chicago, Black Lives Matter, Los Angeles, all support Hamas and what's happening to Israel.
Exactly. And it's so sad. It really is sad that it's really come to that, that we're going to support known terrorists that are on video, taking videos of raping women, killing children, dragging a woman naked through the street. I mean, they're videoing it, and they're proud of it, and we got people here in America who are cheering it on.
Has Congress defunded the Palestinian operation yet? No.
Of course not.
They could do
it. That's the other thing, too. Yeah. They could do it. They should be doing it right now instead of voting for a speaker.
You need a speaker, but where are the states? Where are the governors? Where are the governors, you know, screaming at Congress, stop the money going to Gaza and Hamas? Where are they?
Well, yeah, so Ron DeSantis already came out and is defunding anything, and he did something to stop Iranian businesses from getting business licenses in Florida. I mean, he's doing what he can. Without the legislators being in office right now, because they don't come back until January, but he's doing some things right now to kind of stop it. Of course, you know, is he doing it just because of
he's running for president? Yeah, of course.
But even when he was governor before, he's put a stop to a couple different things in the past too. So.
Oh, yeah, he's a great governor. He just shouldn't be running for president. But here's a staggering statistic I heard yesterday. The Brandon Obama insurrection has given Ukraine some $150 billion in total so far, right, since the war started, or maybe even before it. The entire amount we've given Israel ever is only $187 billion, because they get about $3 billion a year. So Ukraine, in like a year and a half, has almost equaled the total money we've given to Israel. So if we had $110 billion for Ukraine, we easily had, you know, half of that for Israel.
Well, yeah. I'll even go a little bit further. Do we need to keep funding Israel is my question.
Okay. Well.
Do we need to be funding anybody? I don't mean just Israel, because I'm not anti-Semite or anything like that.
No. You can question Israel without being labeled anti-Semite. That would be stupid. That's, you know, that's like talking about a black leader if you're a white person makes you racist. No, it doesn't. That's insane. We talk about that all the time. But it's a good question. But that was a peace treaty. That's actually by peace treaty. Remember the Camp David Accords with Jimmy Carter, Anwar Sadat, Menachem Begin?
Right.
Remember when they met? Well, Begin, you know, Anwar Sadat wanted aid. He said, well, you're going to pay me. If I'm going to have peace with Israel, it's going to cost you. So they got $3 billion. So Israel said, well, hey, if they're going to give him $3 billion, they've got to give me $3 billion too. Come on. What's going on here? We got to make a deal, right? So you just see Menachem Begin, right? So that's why Israel gets $3 billion. It's actually by peace treaty.
Yeah, whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
Peace treaty does matter. You have to change the treaty.
Well,
it does matter, but but that's why Israel gets money.
But it's time to cut all foreign aid across the whole world. We are not an ATM machine. We should not be an ATM machine when we have veterans on the street. You know, last weekend or 2 weekends ago, I was in Navarre, Florida for the third annual Veteran Suicide Awareness, where all last year, the stat I saw, which was very really touched me very strongly, was last year 22 soldiers died in conflict.
Mm-hmm.
In America, 22 veterans die every day of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are spending money on Ukraine, Israel, many, many African nations, and the warlords are just getting richer. While we have veterans who actually served our country, who are out on the streets and committing suicide, who don't know where to go get help at, and their families are at a loss. So,
well,
I mean, the money should be spent here.
Yeah, the best way to stop suicides of military people is to stop having stupid foreign wars. No more Iraqs,
yeah.
No more Afghanistan, no more Vietnams, no more Koreas, no more Bosnias, no more any of the stupid wars that we've had. But I'll tell you, as far as foreign aid goes, I would make an exception for Israel, because Israel is our ally, is our friend, and is in a very precarious position. There's no other country I know of that is that small that has that many enemies around it ready to kill them just for being Jewish, just for being who they are. So Israel is the one case I would make an exception. I have no problem with aid for Israel, military aid, you know, and they've got the soldiers. They got more soldiers than we do. They got 300,000 people mobilized.
Yep.
Well, our Marines are only 185,000 combat Marines. We have more bureaucrats armed at 287,000 than we have Marines at 185,000. Well, let's send our bureaucrats
yep.
over. Let them go fight. You know, detail them to Israel. Say, here, we're going to
well,
exchange program.
Yeah,
send the IRS.
Yeah, but Greg, if you uh-huh. defund all these countries,
mm-hmm.
there's no more war. Because they're not going to have money to fight a war.
Exactly.
That
no,
money,
I agree with you. No, you're absolutely
money.
Right. Yeah. Get rid of the foreign aid. Bring prosperity to them by leading by example, saying, look, you can have anybody in the world can have the prosperity America used to have simply by having freedom and removing corruption. That's all it takes. More freedom, less corruption, you get prosperity. Bianchi?
That's why I changed my telephone service to PureTalk, because they support programs that work to prevent suicides among the U.S. veterans, which is a major problem.
I wonder if they sponsor us. I should talk to them. Pure Talk. I'm going to write that down. I might even mess with that myself. Bill, you got about 3 minutes.
Well, actually, I'm just going to cut it short right here. I think that we're at a great stopping point. You know, just pay attention to, you know, to everyone out there, just pay attention to the words that are being said and slid into these news reports, because what they're doing is they're slowly trying to manipulate you into having feelings that are really not supposed to be there. And so, you know, and we're going to see it. You know, globalists are going to always start wars. And one last thing I want to say is, as much as I want Jim Jordan to be speaker, I just don't see it happening today. I know I'm kind of opening up a new can of worms, but it kind of looks like Scalise may end up being our Speaker of the House. But I do need to go earn my dollar for today, and
okay.
We'll talk more next week.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. And I'm going to start playing some of our announcements, because they may have changed the policy here at Blog Talk and only given me exactly 3 hours as opposed to a little overtime.
You know what,
so we're gonna,
Greg?
Real quickly. Go ahead.
They talk about Hakeem Jeffries being Speaker of the House. Well, why don't they make him? Why don't they ask him to denounce his position of his uncle? Like they make everyone else denounce things.
Oh, agreed. But the Republicans don't do that. All right. Hold on. We'll be right back with Wendy. Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com. WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly.
Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Panglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Panglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Panglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. All right, let's get to Wendy. Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick. Yeah, so I think Blog Talk's taken away our overtime, so I have to squeak in all our announcements during the show, which is probably a better idea anyway, so people will have more chance to listen rather than go, oh, it's the commercials at the end. Okay, fine. Hi, Wendy. We're working today. Everything's on. It started on time. The website's working, you know.
Well, okay. Yeah. I know yesterday
God's
was
got our back.
But, you know.
We're doing well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm fine. I actually rested. I can't believe it. Yesterday was nuts. Everything went wrong. Like I say, the site went down. I had an echo. I had to disconnect myself. I had to call in by phone. But we managed to get two incredible people together. I don't know if you heard yesterday, but we had Dr. Naomi Wolf and Dr. Judy Mikovits on together, and they'd never talked to each other. That was unbelievable. So we're going to get them back. Go ahead.
I will definitely have to go back and listen to that because, you know, they're both amazing people. So
yeah, and I had a feeling they'd never talk. So I text Judy beforehand. I say, Judy, you ever talk to Naomi Wolf? She said, no. So, okay, well, why don't you talk, call in tomorrow? She's like, okay. I have friends.
You do have good friends. Well, all the things that are happening in the world, focusing on Israel right now. And I see so many differing opinions as people thinking those who were born after 1960 are pretty much clueless about what's happening in Israel and why. And those who were born before that, either they don't follow history or they don't know scripture or they're just Democrats. So,
well, who don't want to know history or follow scripture. So yeah, you got kind of a twofer in that, but this is a great topic because there's a lot of misconceptions about the origins of Israel. The fact that most people don't know there is no Palestine, there's never been a country of, you know, and we were talking earlier, most of these folks are from the Ottoman Empire, which was Turkey, or is Turkey now, or Jordan. And so you can clear up the historical record and, let's sort this out. Let's sort out the players.
Yeah, well, first off, Israel, Jerusalem, God created that, and it's his desire that that piece of the world that he created, that he calls the apple of his eye,
mm-hmm.
Is never going to be taken. We have Israel has tried to bow to the pressure. No, they didn't try. They did. They did bow to the pressure of everybody around the world trying to get Israel, who has this little tiny sliver of land, to give away even more of that little tiny sliver of land to quote unquote Palestinians. So, and then, but that's not. Yeah, they've been offered the Gaza Strip. They've been offered land in Jordan. They've been offered all kinds of stuff, and they refuse. Because what do they really want? They want Jerusalem. Why is that a big deal? What this little tiny town of Jerusalem, or it's grown now, but it's this insignificant compared to the size of all other countries around it.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the world.
What does Jerusalem mean? What does that translate to?
It's really two words into one, but it's Yeru, which is a form of Yahweh, and Salem, king. This is where Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit have crowned this part of the world as theirs.
Okay.
And so, and peace, peace in Jerusalem, peace in the holy city. So here we are wanting to understand, or at least hopefully people are wanting to understand, what is this all really about? Because it doesn't make sense that all these countries surrounding Israel, who literally are 1,000 times bigger than they are, what is it about Israel that they not only want to take Jerusalem, but they want to wipe out all Jewish people there? Why?
Heard that before. this is a common theme now with leftists. In other words, like Hitler and Arabs and Muslims. And so, is there any? I guess, is there anything these folks either joined up, had in common, worked together? And what is the reason why both, Nazis and Muslims, not all Muslims, obviously, but, Muslims that hate Jews, these two seem to have the same, goal of just wiping Jews off the face of the earth. What possible, logic reason, or is it just based on pure hatred? And where did that come from? Big question,
well,
I know.
It has
Maybe
to
another
that,
day.
Yeah, it goes. It goes back to Abraham.
Okay.
And Abraham and Sarah, because when they were younger, Sarah was barren and couldn't have children. And Abraham and Sarah were told by God that they would have a son. So here they are all excited when they have, when they're in their childbearing years, that they're actually going to have a son.
Mm-hmm.
But years go by and they don't have a son and they don't have a child of any kind. It's just nothing. Hmm. So then they get to the point where they are in their 90s, obviously past childbearing age. And Sarah has a handmaiden, a servant girl, and she tells Abraham, and this is what happens when we think that the Lord needs help. When we don't trust that his sovereign plan really is sovereign,
mm-hmm.
and that maybe he just needs a little help, maybe he's busy doing something else, and we'll just kind of help him out.
Yeah, exactly.
So, so Sarah tells Abraham, take Hagar, my servant girl, and let her bear you a son, and then at least our name carries on, and, and the promise comes to pass. So Abraham says, okay, we're getting up
if
there, maybe this is the way.
Yeah.
So he takes Hagar, she bears him a son, whose name is what? Ishmael.
Mm-hmm.
Ishmael, Abraham loved his son. I mean, truly loved his son, Ishmael. Well, about the time Ishmael was 15, God comes down and touches Abraham and Sarah, and they conceive, and they have their son, Isaac. which means laughter. And that's the son of promise. Ishmael is not the son of promise. Ishmael is the son of let's do it ourselves. And let's see if we can interrupt the holy plan of God with our own way. So Ishmael was born first, and God did not hate Ishmael. It's just that he was not the son of promise. The son of promise was Isaac that God gave Abraham and Sarah when they were 99 and 90. So here we are with two nations, and he told Abraham, I will make your son a great nation. Well, he did. Well, after, let's back up to the relationship between Sarah and Hagar. Everything was fine until Hagar gave birth to a son. Then all of a sudden Hagar says, well, I bore the son, and you're not the head of the house anymore. It's me, because I bore him a son. Well, how do you think that went?
Oh, there's a reality show in biblical times. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And Sarah's like, oh, hell to the no. This ain't flying in my house. So she tells Abraham, you take that woman and you take that child and you kick them out. They ain't staying here. They don't have to go home, but they can't stay here. This hurt Abraham because he loved Ishmael. But he knew Sarah was his wife and Hagar was being impudent. And so they had to go. So he sends her out with some food and says, you know, you got to go. So she starts going out across the desert and they run out of food and all that kind of stuff. And she realizes that I have really blown it. And me and my child are going to die. So she puts Ishmael under some scrub brush that was growing out in the desert. And she kept going because she couldn't stand to hear the baby cry. And she knew it was going to die. And she cried out to the God of Abraham and said, help me, save my baby. So God answers her and says, don't worry, I will take care of him. And he will become a great nation. And that had to, the promise that God had made to Abraham had to be kept. So Ishmael became a great nation, but he was not the son of promise. Isaac became a great nation, but he was the son of promise. So here we are with the current dilemma. Muslims claim Ishmael is the firstborn of Abraham, because they all, Christians and Muslims, believe in Abraham and call him Father Abraham.
Okay.
He created the nations, right? So,
right.
But so here's where the problem comes in, because Muslims think
Ishmael
is the,
right?
Is the firstborn, and in that culture, the firstborn gets all the rights.
Right.
Right? So, but God said, this is not the firstborn I chose, the firstborn they chose. I chose Isaac. He's the son of promise. Therefore, here comes God's favor upon Isaac and his descendants. So the Jews know Isaac is the son of promise. The Muslims think Ishmael should have all the rights because he was the firstborn. So this is where the enmity comes, because there's two great nations now, two great nations, and they differ on who has the right to the land. Well, God is the one who
said. Well, that makes perfect sense. I wish that had been explained to me 30 years ago. But that makes perfect sense. Okay.
So now we have God saying Israel is his, Israel is forever. And you can send every nation in the world, which is coming, by the way, against Israel, but they are going to prevail because God will not let Israel be taken out. That's the apple of his eye, and it is nobody's land, including the Jews, to give away, which they attempted to do to try to keep peace in the world because they were told,
well,
you're the ones who gave away. peace from happening because you won't give away your country. Hello?
Well, you can't give away – if you give away your country, you don't have a country to have peace, you know, for or with.
That's right.
And my solution, I've been talking about this for years, the one-state solution, which is more land for peace. Now, instead of Israel giving away land for peace, take more land because everything that is part of Israel is peaceful. So Israel needs the Golan, needs Gaza, and needs the West Bank. Take those things, put them under Israel, and say, stay if you're peaceful, and if you're not, we're going to get you the hell out of here, and you can go somewhere else. You'd have peace, at least in those borders of Israel. So which leads to the question: why? I guess Gaza is technically part of Egypt, or is it an independent state? And it's such a miserable little piece of land. Why doesn't Israel just make it part of Israel?
No, Gaza was part of Israel.
Okay.
And that it divides. And if everybody will go to the Oh My God page on the Action Radio Oh My God Report page,
I just love that
you
name.
Will see a map I put up there.
Oh, good.
And
okay.
it's a color
it
map. And so if you can look at this little tiny blue little spot on the map.
The tiny little thing in the middle. That's Israel, yeah.
And Jordan was part of Israel at one time before it got taken.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Syria, Turkey, and Egypt all surrounding Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these want to wipe out Israel.
Yeah.
And so they are surrounded, literally surrounded on all sides by their enemies. And it doesn't make sense when you look at this map with all the huge amounts of land they have, why they would want that little tiny spot of Israel. Because
well, they'll always want
whoever,
a spot. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, because if there is no Israel, then they, in their eyes, they think that they have finally conquered the enemy and it's all theirs, which they think is rightfully theirs anyway.
Right.
Totally ignoring what scriptures say. And by the way, that's all in the first five books. And it's also in if the Quran would actually, you know, quote scripture instead of their own self-written history, they would see where the borders were. It lays out everything about Israel and about when Abraham was marking out the land because the Lord mm-hmm. said, wherever your foot trods is yours. And it became the nation of Israel. So
what are the original boundaries? I know things have changed. I was reading about, the Ottomans, and of course that they dissolved after World War One, and then Turkey, I guess, was created, and France created Syria and Lebanon, and England, sort of had Israel, and they carved out a place and called it Palestine, and it was just a mess. And Iraq was created out of who knows what.
Yeah.
But all these different countries were just made up. They're not real borders. They're not. Based on nations or people. Yeah. Well, Persia.
But Israel did have borders. Israel did, and God's the one who laid them out to the north, south, east, and west. Mm-hmm. So I encourage everybody to go read in Genesis and Exodus, and also Numbers also has some of that because it tells each tribe and each of the 12 tribes of Israel which parts of the land was theirs. So
we need to go
in
the 12 tribes too. Yeah.
Do what?
We need to go in the 12 tribes
anyway.
At some point. We need to continue the history.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the Palestinians are claiming that, that they have the right to this land of Palestine. There is no Palestine. There wasn't Palestine until the 1960s.
Okay.
Palestine was a region. That would be like me saying, yes, I'm from the country of the Southeast.
I'm from the South. It's a nation. God damn it. I got my pickup truck, got my rifle.
Yeah.
I'm a Southern. It's my country. I got a passport and everything. Sorry.
The Southeast is a region. It's not a town. It's not a country. It's a region. So Palestine was a region in Israel. So... here they are claiming that this is, their Jewish state, and that's not it. There never was a Palestine, okay? So that's something that was made up. And so here And the thing about the Palestinian region that they're claiming is all theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote all of this on, and I put this down on the, oh my God, Action Radio page.
I'm looking
at
the map right now. Yeah, I've got the map on my phone here. Yeah.
Well, between World War One and Two, part of Palestine's land was owned by absentee landlords, and they lived in Cairo and Damascus and Beirut.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jews legally purchased land from the absentee landowners that were living in Arab capitals. And the Jews went out of their way to avoid purchasing land in areas where Arabs might be displaced. I mean, they were trying to get along. They were trying to have peace with all the neighbors who were all enemies.
So the
Jews actually sought out land that was cheap land without tenants. I mean, pretty much borderline uninhabitable, but they were choosing that to keep peace. So the whole history of this written out. And this was given to me specifically by Prince Handley, who is a Messianic Jew and a rabbi and just incredibly intelligent man.
Let's get him on the show. It's another special.
When I first started the Oh My God Report, I had Prince Handley on once, and he's a talker, but boy, does he know his stuff. But anyway, so he knows all about the history of Israel and everything to do with the Jewish, you know, customs and laws and beliefs, and then now the Christian beliefs, because he's now a Christian Jew. So he's a fascinating man. But anyway, so he provided a lot of this information, and I just wanted people to understand that Israel actually did offer the Muslim people of British Palestine, as we'll call it that, the entire kingdom of Jordan, the entire area of Jordan, which is twice the size of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what they did?
They said no.
The PLO. Yeah. The PLO revolted against the Jordanian government and blew that entire deal. And when they were offered Israel offered the Palestinians 97% of the land that they claimed to be fighting for in 2000. Israel's the only country who has ever offered them land and to offer their own state. And you know what they did? It was 97% of the land.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted 100, so they rejected it with absolutely no counteroffer at all. And
yep.
Israel made a similar offer again in 2008 with the same result.
You know, Israel's like a battered spouse. You know, they keep going back for, you know, it's like, well, we'll just give you this. You know, well, maybe you'll be nice this time. And you can't do it. This is why I like Benjamin Netanyahu there. But, you know, so is this part of biblical prophecy what's happening right now? Because my solution, as I talked to Bill earlier, and I've been saying, you know, for years, is a one-state solution. You can't give away land and get peace. You know, if you want, Israel can have peace with more land. You know, and we already mentioned it, Golan, West Bank, and Gaza have to become part of Israel. But there are many, many Arab Muslims living quite happily in Israel because it's a prosperous, free country, and they're doing really well. So they're not a problem. Why do they accept Israel?
And here's the thing, that the ones who hate Israel are never going to be happy with just taking Jerusalem either. They won't be happy until all Jews are wiped off the face of the earth.
Right.
And so because of the enmity between Ishmael and Isaac.
That's a long time
and
to hold a grudge.
It goes back.
You know, taught that? Are Muslims taught that Ishmael is? So how does that work?
Is what they're taught. So they grow up believing, hating Jews because they stole our land. Well, no.
Okay.
They did not. And everything that Israel has is supposed to be theirs. That's their rightful stuff and land,
right,
that Israel has. And they are the bad guys because they took it from us and then we want it. So the continual.
And they think Allah's on their side. So
yeah.
What's the origin of the word Allah? Where does that come from?
it's a Muslim thing, and you know that just like and they believe, now this is the craziest thing, but they believe that Jesus existed. They're not denying Jesus. They're saying he was a prophet.
Right.
They don't believe he's the Son of God. They believe Allah is the Son of God, and Muhammad and all that kind of stuff, and
but Allah
all
wasn't
this
a
hierarchy.
Person. Muhammad was a person, but Allah wasn't a person.
Or well,
saying
no,
the same
you can't
thing.
Tell them that.
Okay. So they're
Allah
saying that Muhammad
in their
was...
eyes is,
okay.
is God, you know, the overall God, just like we have the Godhead, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Ghost, you know, and God the Son being Jesus. They don't believe that. Allah is God all over, you know, the umbrella God. And Muhammad is his son and his servant and all that kind of stuff, and the ruler of all ages. So they believe that in the afterlife, when all this stuff is over and done with, that Jesus is going to be Muhammad's servant. Good luck on that.
Oh, I don't think so.
So
yeah.
Yeah, no. So,
so this really comes down to a land dispute of something that happened thousands of years ago. But this happened before there was no Islam. Muhammad was only, what, 500-600 years ago? I mean, I'm not really good on my ancient history.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So what was Islam before Muhammad, or was there an Islam? Or did they just pick this time in history to say that Ishmael really is the firstborn, but not of Abraham and what was her name? I'm not good on
Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah. Abraham and Sarah. Okay, so I'm just trying to think. But so the intervening time between Abraham and Sarah when Ishmael was born up until when Muhammad was born, that's a long time. That's several thousand years.
Yeah, well... kind of weird because Muhammad wasn't actually born, and he was like created born, is you know by Allah, so it gets really messed up. But the point is, they had to create something that says, you know, their holy scriptures, which is the Quran, that says everything belongs to Ishmael, you know, and it's okay to
lie and
kill.
This is probate.
Yeah.
The reason we have all these problems, we have a probate problem here. I mean, I hate to reduce those terms, but that's pretty much what it is.
The problem is,
the
problem is that it's being heard in God's court. And
this
she's going, oh, you're going to come into my court and argue that the land that I created and that I created my people to inhabit is not theirs?
He's the landlord.
So... so anyway, so that if you anybody wants to delve into that a little bit deeper, just go ahead and go to the Action Radio My God group page, and check out what the facts that are in there, and check out the map, and you'll go, wow, all those huge countries want that little tiny piece of land.
But if the map is interesting because it does have Golan, but it has Gaza as part of Israel and has the West Bank as part of Israel. So the Jordan River is what we're talking about. The West Bank, the East Bank is Jordan. The West Bank is, you know, in Israel, but Jordan wants it, or the Palestinian area wants it. That's fascinating. So I can see this can never be solved. So it seems irrational to me for Israel to even consider, quote, land for peace, when the only negotiating position of the radical Muslim world is that Israel ceases to exist and all the Jews are dead. Given that negotiating position, there's nothing to negotiate. You can't give land. It's irrational to give land to people who will never be satisfied until they have all your land and all your people. They couldn't give away enough and still exist.
They could
so
not.
Given that.
And here's the thing.
Okay.
When the U.S. is Israel's only ally forever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Britain.
Except for American Jews.
But and now here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Any time that America has been involved in trying to get Israel to give away land, mm-hmm. we have had disasters here.
Hmm.
The biggest one, let's go back to George Bush. When he really put a lot of pressure on Israel to give away land.
Mm-hmm.
And so... they did. What happened 5 days later to America? Katrina.
I think 9/11.
Hurricane Katrina.
Huh.
That wiped out thousands and homes and land. Total and complete destruction. Mike, my husband, lived in Mississippi when that happened. And it was just absolute devastation everywhere along the Gulf Coast. I mean, from Louisiana to Florida, it was destruction. Biloxi in Louisiana got the worst.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing how we don't put the pieces of the puzzle together to get the big picture. But I'm telling you, folks, Israel is never going to be wiped out. And there's going to come a point, Scripture says, when there's going to be 10 nations, 10, including the United States, after the rapture, this is going to happen, that's going to come against Israel to wipe it out. They will win, he says, because God himself will fight for Israel. No country is ever going to take over Israel. No conglomeration of countries is going to take over Israel. God, you want to see him show his wrath? There you go. Come against Israel. So,
well, they already are coming against Israel, and they keep losing. It's, you know, people sort of wonder. I got Bonnie in the line too, so I'll make her line live. But it's interesting that all these countries, these numerically superior, you know, arms superior, you know, people say, well, Israel is advanced technologically and stuff like that. I'm going to keep background on Bonnie, so let me just mute it for just for a second here. Israel keeps winning every time
because God can make sure that happens.
Exactly. So against numerically superior multiple nations, Israel keeps winning. This tiny little country that you can drive across in a couple of hours at the most, maybe less. In certain places, you can kind of like Liechtenstein. You can look across the whole country from the restaurant I was in. Oh, there's your country. I like this. Cool. You know, but but see, now you can't be the only person that knows this. There have to be Israeli scholars, biblical scholars, Jewish scholars that all know this stuff. And yet Israel is still giving, they're under this ridiculous feeling that if they give away land, they will get peace, which we've already proven here is impossible. You'll never get peace for land. You will just get less land and embolden people that want more land. Yeah.
Right. And Netanyahu finally, you know, he wrote a letter to his countrymen and told them, no more. We are not giving away land.
Well,
we are not doing it.
But how about taking land that used to be Israel? Bonnie, you're live, so don't make background noise or mute yourself. I'll bring her on in just a second. But why aren't they, or is that the plan? Is this, you know, are they going to not only kick Hamas out of Gaza, but actually incorporate Gaza back into Israel where it belongs?
Don't know. My crystal ball has not come in from Sears yet. It's on back order. So,
I'm just wondering if this is a prophecy. You know, I'm just curious.
Yeah. But all I know is that whatever God has given Israel, in the end, it's going to be all made right because, you know, he is not going to allow anything that he promised to his chosen people in the apple of his eye to be taken from them forever. Not going to happen.
Okay. Makes sense. Bonnie, do you have a quick question? Or do you have to go right now, Wendy, or do you have a couple minutes?
No, I just – good morning, Bonnie.
Hey, Bonnie.
Good morning, Wendy. No. Hey. No, I don't have any questions. I'm good.
Okay. Wendy, let's get your contact stuff because Wednesdays are jammed. And so I want to give everybody the time here. So how do folks reach you?
Okay. You can reach me on Facebook at Wendy Arthur or Art by Wendy Arthur or Dimensions Ministries. And bow now, avoid the rush.
There you go. All right. Let's get to Bonnie.
Yes.
Who is that woman behind the microphone? What stories does she have for us? Secluded in a small radio studio in a secure location, Bonnie Nesbitt presents the news of the week and then presents not the news of the week. So join us now for The B Word with Bonnie Nesbitt. Yeah, I'm sorry it's such a slow news week that you had nothing to do. So, you know, we'll see if we can, see if we can drag ourselves through this hour here. You know, I know it's going to be a problem, but, you know, whatever. Go for it. Hi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's just nothing to pick from.
Yeah. Did you like my ideas? Was that
inspiring?
Oh,
yeah. It was very inspiring. And, you know, I did a lot of digging. And I feel like, I think you mentioned Claire. Claire is the one who initially found the connection between Obama and Iran. Yes. So, you know, I know that if she's got some solid stuff, I probably wasn't going to be able to find anything more than her. Where I started, though, was the Muslim Brotherhood. That was the very first thing that I started researching and finding the links to Obama through that. And what
Let's
I could find is that the U.S.'s relationship.
Tell people why you're jumping in the middle of the story. So how did this start?
Sorry.
And let's make connections. It's okay. I want people to be able to make connections. So then when you present the information, it makes sense. So what was the question and how did that come about?
Well, the question was, what is Obama's relationship to the Muslim Brotherhood and how does that relate to Iran, which thereby would relate to Hamas's vested interest, if you will, in what happened to Israel? Essentially connecting all of the dots along the way back in time from Obama and prior to Obama's presidency, linking it to what is happening now. Most interestingly of note, when this attack happened on Yom Kippur, which is the holiest of days for Israel, it was exactly 50 years ago that Hamas did this the last time. Were you aware of that?
I'd heard something about that, but I know that symbolism is a big deal. That's why the Benghazi attack was on the anniversary of 9/11. So the symbolism is huge for these people. So, yeah.
Correct.
Makes sense.
Correct. Yeah, it was exactly 50 years ago.
I didn't know it was Yom Kippur because Rosh Hashanah was last week. I'm not big up on my Jewish holidays, except in high school when half the band was gone because they were Jewish. So that's when I knew when it was a Jewish holiday. Rosh Hashanah was last week. Yom Kippur, that's New Year's, right? That's Jewish New Year?
I believe so. It's their holiest day. So essentially every single Israelite. Exactly. Not only were they celebrating that, but there was also a huge music festival going on at the time. It was supposed to be like a peaceful praise style of music. So, you know, kind of two for one special there. It was the perfect storm for this to happen.
So this obviously it was planned for months. They all knew about this. But see, one of the questions we had, just to jump in here and totally distract you again, is I was wondering why nobody was armed. Nobody was armed in these houses. But if it was the holiday, you know, the celebrating peace and things like that, they wouldn't be, because that'd be like, you know, being armed on Christmas. You know, it just seems weird to people, right? However, like the Tet Offensive, you know, like every holiday, most countries attack on a holiday, or like Pearl Harbor on a Sunday morning. You know, this is classic. This goes back to antiquity. So back to our main question.
Yep, back to the main question. So the origination of the Muslim Brotherhood and its connection to the U.S., I found some interesting things as I dug back, and you may or may not have already been aware of this, but the U.S.'s relationship with the Muslim Brotherhood can actually be traced back to the 50s, and it was essentially a continuation of their relationship with the U.K. that funded its establishment in 1928. Okay. And so there were key figures and operatives of that movement that migrated to the U.S. 70 years ago, and they assumed important positions in America's academic and intellectual institutions, which goes back to many times what I've said. The problem is with our institutions, our colleges, our universities. Yep. This is where this is happening. They also infiltrated, though, some pretty influential think tanks, which is what enabled them to intervene and pull strings to obstruct our decisions as in the U.S., when we aligned with the best interests of its allies, when it comes to like Iran, Turkey, and Qatar. You even had Kamala Harris, when she was a senator, berating the U.S. administration for withdrawing from the Iran deal. She even said America's withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal was ill-advised. So essentially that was before Biden won, and she was saying that, you know, if
Biden
that deal were to be reinstated,
But how
exactly.
can that be
he
ill-advised?
Did, he was, he did.
Wait. Did they forget the hostage crisis? Did they forget the, you know, the invasion of our embassy? Did they forget the kicking out of, the Shah? I don't forget what happened to the Shah. I guess he sought refuge in the United States, died shortly thereafter. But Iran has said death to the USA forever, ever since Ayatollah Khomeini. you know, and so
right.
Because we just went
right.
over that with Bonnie as to why, and they're Muslims. So they had that same Ishmael problem that the rest of the Muslim world has.
Right.
So shouting death to America, right. why would it ever be a good idea to give nuclear weapons to somebody who shouts death to America mm-hmm. every day? That's
exactly. Exactly.
That's irrational.
No, I mean, that's essentially, it is completely mm-hmm. irrational. It's like giving the bully on the playground a slingshot and a gun and a whip and saying,
no,
you know what,
that.
I'm just going to play yeah. over here on this side of the playground and I expect you to play nice because I'm holding up a sign saying, please don't shoot me.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
No. It'd be like giving, you know, I guess Hitler nuclear weapons, because then you said, well, he's got so much weapon, you know, weaponry, he won't use it. He'll just be peaceful from now on because he's got the weapons.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent.
Exactly.
You know, so no, giving
right.
Iran a nuclear bomb, giving a theocracy that believes that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now here's the badass question. Did Obama do this for Iran because of his hatred of Israel and Jews? And he doesn't care if they use
that
nuclear weapons
well.
Against Israel.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a definite good question. And as I dug into this, obviously, I don't think a lot of people are aware of the fact that Obama allied with the Muslim Brotherhood movement and enabled them to participate in drawing the U.S.'s foreign policy in the Middle East, because he supported projects in Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, and Syria during the Arab Spring. And his administration had no qualms about amending the content of 800 official documents, removing every single hint or reference to political Islam every time they referred to the Muslim Brotherhood, trying to make it essentially squeaky clean, like nothing to see here. It's not the Muslim mm-hmm. Brotherhood. We're not going to call it Islam. And then during his presidency, he even put people into his house, like into his cabinet. They were Muslim Brotherhood people. And I don't mm-hmm. think people understand that. He had advisors. They've forgotten. It's very possible they've forgotten. But these are dangerous people that he had advising him. He clearly had ties way back to the days of when he was senator in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And if he has an intense hatred for the Jews and Christians as a whole, essentially, my
and
question is why?
And the British, too.
That too.
That'll be another week. That'll be next week. Yeah. The British and Robert
right?
Malley, the Iranian spy that has been working in the Brandon insurrection. So Robert Malley for next week, too, and his hatred of the British.
Yes.
Let's go back to let's get the real question. The Muslim Brotherhood. Now, for those that don't know, Hamas came from the Muslim Brotherhood. So we're going to trace that, I'm sure, too. But so let's go back to the Muslim. So do you have origins of the Muslim Brotherhood? And can you name names of people that were in our government that were part of the Muslim Brotherhood? That'd be interesting.
I absolutely can name names. Yes, I actually, I bolded them because I'm like, I don't want to forget this. So we have Mohammed El-Abiari. He was a member of the Homeland Security Advisory Council.
Oh,
and
great.
He had met with national security staff inside the White House. He has been accused of downloading sensitive material from law enforcement databases. And he even tweeted at one point, quote, I do consider the United States of America an Islamic country with an Islamically compliant constitution.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting? that'd be
I
news to
so.
Most Americans. But, well, it
right?
would be an Islamic country because, you know, the people keep forgetting this, that Barack Hussein Obama is Muslim.
Correct.
So
correct.
Under him, if,
yeah.
you know, that everything was done, I mean, you know, you didn't see him celebrating Christmas much in the White House. And he talked about his Muslim heritage. And then George Stephanopoulos said, oh, you mean your Christian heritage? Oh, yes, my Christian heritage. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but
mm-hmm.
But if
exactly.
you look, but the Muslim Brotherhood, the one I remember was Robert Morsi, who was the head of Egypt. So let's keep going. Tell me more. This is interesting.
Okay. Well, there was another national security advisor to the White House. His name was Imam Mohammed Magid. His father
mm-hmm.
was a Cairo-trained Muslim Brotherhood scholar. He preached, I don't know if he still preaches, but he was preaching at a Washington area mosque, served as president of the Islamic Society of North America, which the government even says is a front for the Muslim Brotherhood in America. And in 2008, the Justice Department ID'd his ISNA as an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest terror finance case in U.S. history. And
wow.
that designation was upheld by four federal judges on the basis of evidence that was provided. So you have essentially somebody who's the son of a Muslim Brotherhood, how can I even put it into terms? It's not that he was running a Ponzi scheme, but the fact that he was the largest terror finance case in U.S. history tells us that this guy had a lot of money, was giving a lot of it to the Muslim Brotherhood and or Hamas as it developed, and
money
that
laundering.
The fact that
sounds
he
like money
still,
laundering.
Oh, yeah, complete money laundering. Yes,
right, okay.
And the fact that he was Cairo trained means that, you know, along with several of the other people that were involved in 9/11, what was the, I don't know how you pronounce his name, Anwar Awlaki. Remember the cleric Anwar Awlaki? He was supposedly the field commander, the U.S. field commander of the entire operation. Yeah. So the hijackers themselves got support from several Muslim Brotherhood mosques that were in our country, but they were handled by 9/11. Mm-hmm.
So that'd be the blind sheikh. And this is the one, Anwar Awlaki is the one you're talking about.
There you go. There you go.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Because he was thought to be the field commander. One other person, though, that was in the staff is Rashad Hussein. And that is who Obama appointed as his special envoy to the Muslim world. And he had been involved with various Muslim Brotherhood fronts. He served as deputy associate to the White House Council, and national security issues were among his areas of responsibility. And he even helped draft, this is what just kills me, he even helped draft Obama's 2009 speech in Cairo. Banned Muslim Brotherhood leaders were invited to that event.
Of course.
So you have open, flat-out hypocrisy and essentially betrayal of our country by inviting these people to that speech. Obama didn't care. He had somebody
no,
help
because
him
he wants
speech.
To fundamentally transform us into a communist Muslim theocracy dictatorship. I mean, it's pretty clear.
Exactly.
You know, look at everything he's doing now to destroy this country. You know, what? There's two problems. One, that Obama's trying to destroy the country, and two, that everybody else is letting him. You know, it takes both of those components.
Right.
And they're just sitting around doing nothing. So Muslim Brotherhood, why is it a brotherhood? What are their origins? Where do they go back to? Is it part of the Iranian government or the Egyptian government? Where's their origin?
I think it's Egypt, but let me just double check that. It's a Sunni Islamist organization. Yeah, it was founded in Egypt by Islamic scholar and school teacher Hussein Elbana. And it was in 1928, as I stated, which moved into the UK, which then came into the US in the 50s.
So 28, that's when that's after World War One, when Britain was basically dividing up Israel and Palestine, making up a country that didn't
exist.
Yeah, or
exactly.
An area is Wendy
just
described
like,
it, a region, yeah.
As I was just about to say, that's what Wendy was just talking about. Yeah, exactly.
So they came
and they
in
essentially,
thinking, go ahead.
I was just going to say their mission was to Islamize society through the promotion of religious law, values, and morals. So essentially they're coming in as, hey, look at us. We're going to make this a better country because we all need to be on the same page. And, you know, like the Muslim Brotherhood itself wanted to take over government by force of religion. That's always been the separation of church and state in our country has been upheld since its foundation. And every time that any president has come in and tried to overstep the bounds and try and make it a strictly Christian society, not that I have any problem with that, but when they try and push the Christian values on America as a whole, there's always pushback because there's those who don't believe. Well, the Muslim Brotherhood wants to do the same thing, but from a different style. They want to come in and push Islam. But the problem is they won't take anybody saying, no, I don't want to believe in Islam. I'd like to be, you know, an atheist or any other religion. They won't allow that. It'll be death to you if you aren't Islamic. Period.
You're an infidel. Yeah, at that point, you're an infidel.
Exactly.
I remember seeing, yeah,
exactly.
I saw buses. I watched buses in San Francisco with signs on the back saying, you know, Islam needs to submit. You must submit yourself completely to Allah. And if you don't, you know, what the implied message is, if you don't, you know, we're going to kill you. It's a fascinating thing. But the problem with the pushback, you know, and I don't want an established government church. So people forget that the First Amendment is really clear. When it says establishment of a religion, what it means is that the government does not create the church of the USA, just like there's a Church of England.
Right.
So there's a Christian Church of England, it's a Protestant church, and the head of the Church of England is right now King Charles, to be Queen Elizabeth.
Right.
And so the separation is that the whoever our government is not the church. There is no Church of America. There is no Bishop of America.
Right.
You know, none of those things. So
no.
The separation, but that's all the separation is. Now, if a president wants to have Christian values, that's fine. If they want to preach Christian values, that's fine too. As long as they don't establish a government religion. So a lot of people get that wrong. So can you have a Christian creche at Christmas time, you know, nativity on public land, this taxpayer support? Of course you can. That's not establishing a religion.
Mm-hmm.
That's just allowing a Christian symbol.
Right.
And so people get that mixed up the time. But let's get, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's also an extension of the freedom of speech. I mean, we as Americans are given that freedom to worship on Sundays if we want to, but nobody is forcing us to go to church. We are allowed to put the Ten Commandments where we want to put them. Nobody is forcing us to do that or to remove it. We shouldn't have to remove it either. The flip side is always true. We should not have to be forced to go against our own religious beliefs on our personal property. I understand where people have pushback on state properties where they don't want it in front of courthouses because they feel like it interferes with justice. I wish that they wouldn't allow that. I mean, I wish that the Ten Commandments were allowed at every single courthouse because they are the foundation for justice, in my personal opinion.
It's probably some legal code, too.
I can understand people.
Don't steal, don't covet, don't murder. I mean,
exactly.
You know, pretty much it. Yeah.
But I also understand the opposition against that where people are like, no, we have separation of church and state for a reason. Let's not put the Ten Commandments on government property. Yeah. Okay. I see your point.
So let's get back to that. But there's no, when it comes to Islam, there is no concern about separation of church and state. Obama, I mean, I'm surprised he didn't celebrate Ramadan. You know, you've got the Muslim Brotherhood. I want to get to Robert Morsi because he's the only name I remember. He was president of Egypt after Hosni Mubarak. So we had Anwar Sadat. Let's just do a little history tracing of Egypt for a bit. Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin, as we talked about, had the Cave of Accords in 1978, I think, under Jimmy Carter. Greatest moment of his success. Got them together. And they each got $3 billion a year each. So they negotiated a good deal. So they got money out of it. So they had a peace treaty. And the borders were pretty much established. After Anwar Sadat was assassinated, Hosni Mubarak came to power. And he was pretty much a dictator as far as I know, but, you know, relatively benevolent as far as dictators go. So it was a problem, but it wasn't that bad. Then, I'm not sure when, but Robert Morsi of the Muslim Brotherhood comes to power, and the U.S. backed him. Now, did Obama help put him in office? Is that one of his things? Because I know he went against Bibi Netanyahu in Israel. Have you traced that at all?
I have not traced that. I don't know.
Okay, next week. You know, every report leads to more questions. Okay, so Obama and Morsi were like buds, as far as I know. I don't know the timeline. So when did Morsi become president of Egypt? But the Egyptians hated him with a passion, because he was an authoritarian Islamic fundamentalist. He wanted a theocracy. Yeah. Okay, so let's get back to Obama. So where did he pick up this strident, Muslim attachment? Was it Indonesia? Was it Kenya? Was it from his father? Was it when he came here? Because the people that backed him were basically communists. The Frank Marshall Davis, the one that basically raised him, was a complete communist. But I don't think the communists were associated with the Muslim theocrats yet, because communism by definition has no religion, because thou shalt have no god before the state. So there's almost a conflict there.
Right.
So tell me what you know about that, about how he got involved with these folks. Go ahead.
I don't know how he essentially got involved with the Muslim Brotherhood from the get-go. I need to do some more digging to see if I can find origins of his relationship, especially
with
the people that he brought into the White House.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. It's fascinating to me, though, because like you mentioned, he was deeply invested in his college years into that communist thinking, and he was reading communist authors, and there's a lot of anti-God in that because of their hatred, if you will, for an actual religion. So for him to come so staunchly into being like Muslim and anti-Jew, I don't know where that stemmed from. I would hesitate to say Kenya, because I don't think Kenya is that way. Indonesia, perhaps. His father, perhaps. I'm at
Kenya
a kind of
British.
A loss as to know.
Kenya was British, though. Kenya was a British colony.
Well, I suppose there is some merit to that if they were British and trying to take that Islamic side of it. And what is the place that he stayed the longest at in being raised? It was how many years in Indonesia? Do you know?
Yeah, I don't know. He also had a different name there, too.
Yeah.
But here's what I do know. And I talked about this years ago. And I said one of the reasons I didn't want Obama president is because he'd been raised in three different countries. You know, and because of that, or at least two, we'll say Kenya. We can assume, I don't know how long he was there. Probably not very long, but we know he was raised in Indonesia and the United States. And I don't know. And he also visited Pakistan, which is kind of interesting. That's the trip that nobody seems to want to talk about. And his academic records have disappeared from Colombia. Also rather suspicious. So we don't know exactly what courses he took. However, it's kind of like Obama Swampy. You know, we don't know much about his time in Yale Law School, which is he got a law degree he's not using, but that's another story. So the problem with people that live in different countries growing up is that your allegiance is split. I would not be a good U.S. president for the simple reason that I was born in Canada. I spent 4 years in Australia, four formative years, and then I came to the United States at 12. So I grew up in three different countries. Well, there's no way I'm going to have the same allegiance to this country that Donald Trump does, because I'm going to look at this and go, well, here's how Canadians see it, here's how Australians see it. You know, here I can see Americans as the advantages. I can see Americans as they see themselves. And they, you know, when people say this is the greatest country on earth, they, you know, nothing better than America. God damn it, the rest of the world, they all want to be American. No, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, Obama's right. The Greeks want to be Greek. You know, the Indonesians want to be Indonesian. He's absolutely right there. But he will never have the loyalty of a natural-born American, ever.
No.
Nobody born in a foreign country can. And this is why natural-born Americans are so critical. Look what he did. Who else could destroy the country as much as Obama did, except Brandon? You know, but he's doing that through Obama.
Obama, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just another arm of Obama.
Okay, so tell me more what you found. I've been distracting you.
Well, I mean, I was going to move on a little bit to some of the stuff that I have
please
regarding
yep.
the current in Israel. So I think that a lot of people, as they're looking at the death toll in Israel and they're seeing the numbers, when I got upon this article here, we were at about 800 deaths. We're probably well beyond that by now. But when you compare the population of Israel to the population of America, to put it into context for the everyday American who cannot fathom this, their death toll in this process would be equivalent to 20 to 25,000 Americans killed. So it'd be like having 7 9/11 attacks in a 24-hour period. That's devastating. It was devastating enough to lose 2,000. Exactly.
25,000
exactly.
is twice the size of Milton, Florida. You know, that'd be like twice the size of the town that I live in, you know, being killed. Yeah. 25,000 is a small city. Yeah.
It's absolutely devastating. It's absolutely devastating. So then the fact that he had to free up $6 billion, and I looked into that too, is like, what did Biden do with this $6 billion that he gave to Iran? Mm-hmm. And essentially, he wasn't giving American taxpayers, this is the argument I'm finding, he's not giving our $6 billion to Iran. He's merely freeing up $6 billion in South Korean funds that Trump froze. He's unfreezing it. He's allowing Iran to have access to it. And so they're softening the blow of this across the country to say, well, it's okay because it was Iran's money anyway. It wasn't even ours to begin with. No.
No, we froze it.
I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
We froze
just
it
like
for
harder.
A reason. And the fact, exactly. And we, on top of that, are getting our hostages back, but we're freeing up Iranian terrorists in the process. Why was there any unfreezing of funds? How does America bow at the feet of Iran a second time after skids of cash were sent by Obama during his administration? And now a second time, $6 billion of assets that were frozen are unfrozen. Why is it that we keep bowing to Iran in this? Why are we being so weak? And
I do not
for the life of me. Well,
I know
please
why.
Share your thoughts.
I know why. Because the left and the Obama and the Muslim crowd want Iran to be the power center of the Middle East. That's why. So they want a strong Iran. They want a strong Iran to go against Saudi Arabia and Israel, which is Egypt, which are the other real power centers. And so this is, I think, a direct assault on the Abraham Accords. And this is why I brought it up with Wendy yesterday. I got some kind of truck outside making noises. If you hear any background noise from my line, let me know, because I'll have to run up and close windows. But otherwise, I'll keep going. Oh, there's the garbage truck. All right. So what happens is that they want Iran to basically run the Middle East. Saudi Arabia, they figure, is too Western now. You know, the new prince, and they're still mad at, you know, what's his name, Adam Khashoggi, the journalist that was killed. Yeah, that was a problem. But you don't sacrifice our entire nation and their nation over it. We lost 12 people in these raids on Israel. So they want Iran to be the center. That's why Iran's getting the nuclear weapons. That's why Iran's getting the money. Iran, they're trying to build up Iran as the center of power because they figure they can deal with them most closely. Well, the only reason that they think they could deal with an Islamic dictatorial Middle Ages theocracy is because that's how they think. That's why I say Russia. So the question is, Obama, who thinks like someone from the Middle Ages, you know, 1,000 years ago, that Islam is great and needs to dominate the world, and also has a communist indoctrination where it's okay to kill a million people or 2 million or 10 million or 100 million as long as you get your objective. You got to break a few eggs, as Lenin said, right? Well, a few eggs means millions of people in gulags and everything else. He has no problem with that.
Right.
So the only reason
–
so this is the problem. So when Trump comes along, And it upsets the world government apple cart by connecting Israel with Bahrain, with Qatar, or Qatar, which doesn't sound right, Qatar, Morocco, the United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia and the Abraham Accords. All of a sudden, that alliance, guess who's left out? Iran. You know why? Because they're an Islamic Middle Ages, thousand-year-old dictatorship, you know, of Islam. Now, there's some Islam countries that, I mean, you don't hear anything from Indonesia, right? Indonesia is the largest population of Muslims in the world. They don't go out conquering anybody. They don't take over islands.
No.
They don't do anything. They're just, you know, they're just Indonesia, right?
Exactly. I was about to say, when's the last time you heard of the Indonesian army going after someone?
So Islam is not the problem. Radical terrorists, we want Ishmael's land back, you know, is the problem. And Iran,
definitely.
Let's go back to Iran. What's the history of Iran? What were they called before Iran?
What was Iran? I know in biblical terms, Iran.
Persia. Let me save some time. Persia.
Persia. There you go. Yep,
okay.
Persia.
And what did the Persians want?
Persian Empire.
Yeah, the empire, which was huge, which was most of the world at one point, if I remember. I'll have to get Pianca on the line.
Right.
He's actually on the line. I want to cover some more stuff. Pianca, I'll get to you. I want to make sure we get this covered. But the Persian Empire, you guys remember the 300 Spartans? Come on, you all seen the movie, you know, Thermopylae?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. So that's Persia.
King Xerxes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Persia wants its empire back, but they wanted a Muslim empire. I don't know what religions the Persians were back back in Xerxes' time. But this is a longstanding thing. So that's what I think it is, because I heard on the news that they want that Iran to be the power center. And now we're making the connections as to why, because, you know, Obama and the imams in Iran think exactly the same way.
Right. Right. Well, and the fact that we have open borders lends credence to this as well. It goes right. It's not just the Mexicans or the South Americans that have been coming. We have people from all over the world that have been coming into our borders. And we've had these people infiltrating these Iranian undercover, Russian undercover, Chinese undercover. People tend to just focus on the southern border as being, oh, well, it's just our, you know, friends from Mexico coming
the
because they're seeking a better life. And
it's all people in the rest of the country. They're focusing on that to take you away from the real issue, which is small town America has terrorist cells all over it right now. Yeah.
All over it. Yes.
Go armed.
Exactly.
People.
Exactly.
Go armed. Yeah.
Right. Right. So essentially, you know, if we're printing even our ballots as we're voting, if we're printing those in multiple languages just to help people at the voting booth be able to vote, how sad is that? We should only be printing it in English. And if you have not learned the language, you have no right. Now, even that being said, people that are infiltrating the country with that ulterior motive, obviously they speak English. They're not going to have a problem reading a ballot written in English. They're going to still do their finagling. But at the very least, we're portioning out a large amount of the, what you said, like kind of like the side story. Like, let's focus on the fact that people that speak Spanish are coming in and voting because they have Spanish ballots. They're not so much the problem. It's the cells that are here already. And, you know, I believe background checks should be given to anybody that comes into this country. And obviously they have been turning a blind eye towards many of these people and not doing proper background checks to see what are your originations. Why not ask them a simple question on every single time someone wants to come in? Are you against Jews and Christianity? Why not make that a foundational question for every single person that wants to come into this country? Do you wish harm upon Christians or Jews?
That's a good question, but the question that I was asked was I ever a member of the Communist Party? Do I ever intend to join? And I said, no. You know, and I could say that without mental reservation or purpose of evasion. So what you might want to take a look at as the old process for immigration, because I went through it. I know exactly what it's all about. I remember my interview. I remember what the guy looked like that interviewed me. I remember reciting the Bill of Rights and explaining each one. I remember going over parts of the Constitution that I had learned. I remember him asking me, was I ever a member of the Communist Party? You know, and would you swear an oath that you'll never join the Communist Party? Absolutely. I don't want to join the Communist Party. You know, I don't know if it's binding on my entire life, but I wouldn't do it anyway. But that's not the point. But the point is that was the standard. So the immigration process is a long time, because the vetting process, you can't vet people at the border because they lie. They lie, they cheat, they provide false evidence, false documentation, everything else. So one of the best processes for testing whether somebody should be a U.S. citizen is the 5 years it takes as a permanent resident before you get citizenship. Because chances are you're going to let your guard down. If you're, you know, a danger to this country, or if you're a welfare bum, if any of the other things that that will happen from people that we're inviting into this country happen during that five-year time, you know, when you're seeing if you're going to be a citizen, you're out. You know, you get sent back.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know? And
exactly.
So that is the best process, is the fact that you have to wait. Now, Americans who are born here, to American parents. Of course, anybody born here to a foreign parent is not an American. I don't care what the policy is. We've been over that a bunch of times. Birthright citizenship does not exist. The 14th Amendment specifically prohibits it. So anybody brought here after 1856, no, 66. I think the 14th Amendment was ratified. So anybody born here after 1866 who did not have American parents is not a citizen. Neither are their progeny, which is going to be a real interesting debate. All right, so let's get back to Obama and the Muslim Brotherhood and anything else that you found. Now, because we got the – I want to do Robert Malley Spy Network next week. But anyway, so what else have you found?
Okay. I wanted to just bring one more thing to your attention, and that is that how do we know – as far as the weapons go that were left behind in Afghanistan, we know that there were many things that were being, as far as like weapon and dollar amounts that were forwarded to Ukraine, and then we don't know what Ukraine did. There's no accountability for it. How
they're
do we not know?
That, yeah, they're selling our weapons.
Exactly.
Too.
The Taliban now has everything we left behind, and I actually found a chart that has every single stat pulled up of like the number of tanks and the number of radios and the number of night vision goggles. It's astounding. There's over 350,000 assault rifles alone that were left behind that the Taliban now has use of.
Mm-hmm. And well, actually, they don't have use of it because we're not there. They're selling a lot
Well, we're not there, yes. But even at that, they can still utilize what they want to utilize.
Of course.
So,
yeah. Well,
it's absolutely staggering.
All right, so why would we leave $85 billion worth of weapons behind? Why would we do that?
Well, they would obviously say, oh, well, we left in haste and we just didn't have, no, that's all.
Why would we leave in haste? We're there 20 years. Yeah, we're there 20 years. Why would you do that?
Exactly.
You know, sign a surrender with the Taliban? And was that part of a surrender agreement? No. We never did sign a surrender.
Could very well be behind the scenes.
Ah, so there's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a deal between Obama and the Taliban? Mm-hmm. This is for 2 weeks. See if you can find any connection with Obama and the Taliban. I want to know if there was a secret deal behind the scenes. Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch is probably your best source on this. Claire Lopez, too. Claire used to be on the show. Robert Spencer was on the show once. I want to get him back. He'd be a good person to talk about this. Anyway, so let's find out the Obama-Taliban connections. Because here's how I know Brennan is taking direct advice from Obama. Because Obama is the only person in the United States that calls it the Taliban, right? Welcome, Taliban. Because we're Americans, goddammit, it's the Taliban, right?
You know, we're Americans, Taliban.
Right.
Yeah.
So what does Joe Biden call them?
Taliban?
He calls them the Taliban. Why? Because he's got Obama's voice in that brain chip in his head, literally or figuratively.
Yeah.
Brennan is the only person other than Obama that pronounces it Taliban. So that's how I know that there's a connection. So he's mentally decayed enough that he's actually repeating the voice pattern of the person that's giving him orders. That's how I know how I know Obama's running things.
Like a parrot.
No one else. Yeah. Well, it's worse than that. It's a parrot who's acting, not just saying. Parrots don't know what they're saying, as far as I know. Well, they do have a sense of humor. Anybody's owned a parrot. Anybody's owned a parrot knows they have a sense of humor. They just don't speak English, So I believe that this was a requirement of Brandon to get the military out first, to leave all those people behind. If some Americans got killed, I don't think Obama intended on that necessarily, but what he did intend was to get as many people out of Afghanistan, regardless of who they were, as possible. That's why 100,000 people were flown out, and a lot of people were hanging on those jets and tragically fell off and died. Idiots.
But that's
not the point. The point is that all these people came in. So I divide the world into Hillary's world and Obama's world. Obama's world is foreign, is the foreign policy, is the surrender and the giving of weapons. I believe that was a secret agreement to give the Taliban those weapons, not the Taliban, the Taliban. You know, give all $85 billion worth of weapons as a gift. That was his gift to them to support his Muslim brothers. That's what that was about.
Right. Exactly.
Now, that's his world. Hillary's world is Merrick Garland and the prosecution of anybody associated with January 6th, whether they were there or not. The persecution of all Republicans because she hates Republicans because she lost the election fair and square, by the way. And so Hillary has all the Department of Justice operation. I think that's how they divide up the world. She takes the Department of Justice persecuting Americans and all the secret police and all the surveillance and all the spying on Americans. That's Hillary behind the scenes.
Yeah.
all the foreign stuff, the money, the nuclear weapons, the weapons given to the Taliban. That's Obama. And that's how they think they divide up this government. Does that make sense?
That makes sense to me. That absolutely does. And it also makes sense in the fact that in a lot of her emails that we will never find out about because they were on that server and they're being kept under wraps, probably have a lot of Clinton's connections, if you will, just the same way that we'll never find out Epstein's black book. It's being so hidden from the public because they don't want us to know the truth.
So we can't even get the manifesto from the murderer. The trans murderer up in Nashville. So here's another thing to explore. And I did shows on this earlier. In fact, I even had the stand down orders. I'll play it for you sometime on the show. That two people called in about the stand down orders in Benghazi because Benghazi plays
in
into
Benghazi.
This too. So you want to get the Hillary connection.
Yes.
Now, Benghazi was a gun running operation to ISIS in order to overthrow Assad in Syria. Mm-hmm. So Chris Stone? No, what was his name? Chris, who was the ambassador? U.S. Ambassador Chris something, I've forgotten his name anyway. So, but our four Marines who were killed that disobeyed orders and defended Benghazi, Chris Stevens,
I was just about to say John Christopher Stevens, yes.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, so Chris Stevens, who was basically killed and dragged through the streets and had horrible things happen to him, was there to run guns for Hillary through Benghazi to ISIS. That was her operation.
Yeah.
So now, how does that tie in? Maybe Hillary has a connection to the Taliban, you know, giving weapons too. So we don't know. But we should probably revisit Benghazi. So anything else you found that you want to cover? I'm bringing on Bianca for a bit, and then I'm going to take Bianca at the top of the hour.
Well, the only other thing that I found has absolutely nothing to do with Israel and everything to do with COVID. So I don't know if you want me to get into that or not.
Of course. It was a little interesting
tidbit. Okay. I found out that a Japanese research team in August actually found that there's about 100 different separate strains of the COVID variant, and they have proven that none of them could have evolved naturally. Every single one of them was man-made. Every single one.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, it's like release after release after release, all the scares of, oh no, now we have this variant and oh, we have that variant. And I heard a little bit of Judy Mikovits's snippet yesterday where she was talking about how every single polio vaccine since 2004, I believe, has all of these different strains, all of these different things in it. And she was basically saying, you know, I have it too. I'm not worried because I have the immunization system to deal with it. But why? Why are these man-made things being put into not only vaccines, but being released into? What is the ultimate goal? It's destroying the population that they want to destroy and ultimately making what's left bow to what they want. And it's really taking out anybody that stands up against it because we're in such the minority and we're looked at as crazy people, just like those that wouldn't wear masks and, you know, you're going to be a grandma killer.
That's me.
Me too. And so essentially getting rid of that small voice and hushing us and putting us in a corner, it's the same thing as hushing the people that have the opinion that there's a man and a woman, you're born the way that you are and you can't change what you are. You hush up now. You go to a corner. We don't want to hear from you. We want our own agenda pushed. You can be what you want to be. There's no such thing as masculinity. You can be feminine. You can be masculine. You can be all in one. There's no – be a beet if you want to be a beet. Be a pineapple if you want to be a pineapple. Who cares? It's the same thing.
Well, there's another take on it, too. I think that the globalists don't want to get rid of the world population. They just want them subordinate to them because who's going to do the work? Who's
going
to, you know – clean their house and, you know, who's going to fly the airplanes of their jets and who's, you know, so they want to.
Well, they can get robots to do that, Greg. They're working on AI daily. They can just create a robot. Yes, I will serve you, master. Please tell me what to do. I mean,
yeah, but the robots might rebel. Artificial intelligence might become mechanical intelligence. You know, so you know, I saw
That's
Skynet. I know how this works. But my theory too, that vaccines are a marketing plan. It'd be like an aspirin that gives you a headache, so you take more aspirin.
Right.
It's like salt in your popcorn that causes you to buy drinks. So the reason the flu shot gives you the flu is so they can sell more flu shots, convincing you that you didn't have enough flu shots, so you got to buy more. Why would you need a booster?
Yeah.
See, here's the thing with COVID, all right? So it's a messenger RNA gene-altering shot, right? So messenger RNA teaches your cells to make, allegedly, immunity, but they don't. They really spike protein poisons, and we know the story. So if the first shot teaches your body how to do stuff, your body already knows. It's already making millions of those cells when they replicate using that messenger RNA code that was injected into your body. So if your body already knows how to make COVID, why would you need a booster?
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't.
Right, because the first shot would do it. In fact, you probably could have a minuscule amount of the first shot. All you need is a tiny little bit of messenger RNA to start teaching your cells how to do it, and the natural division of your cells will build the spike proteins and, of course, ultimately, you know, cause you all kinds of problems. But the point is, it's a market. I'm going to try one more time. Excuse me, Greg. It's a marketing. It's a marketing device. It's a self-perpetuating device.
And we've talked.
So the, if you,
right,
so
and we've
COVID
talked about that before with pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, why is it that people who get COVID, you know, had a COVID shot? Well, because the shot is designed to give you COVID, just like popcorn is designed to make you thirsty.
Right.
It's a marketing thing.
Right.
So I don't think it's – I always look for the simple solution. People think it's a world government, they're reducing the population. I don't think they're that smart. Oh, they might want it, but they're not that smart. They're dangerous, but they're not that smart. I think really it's a marketing thing because they want to keep people around long enough. Yeah, they want to keep people around long enough to buy more vaccines and more flu shots, right? You can't kill people, so they're like parasites. They want to make you sick, but they don't want to kill you. They just want to live off you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and as I was saying, I mean, it literally goes with what we talked about a couple of weeks ago when you asked the question about pharmaceuticals and the long-term effects of being on Ritalin and Adderall and some of these, and you know, heart medication and blood pressure medication. It's like essentially they want you so medicated and dependent upon it that you don't know that you could exist without it. And the more that you take something, the side effects now, oh, well, we have to add this drug into the mix because that has to offset the side effect of this drug you're here. And if you would just remove yourself from all of the pharmaceuticals together, like Judy was saying, your body will take care of itself if you take care of your body. And you don't have to rely on pharmaceuticals to do the job for you, but they don't want you to know that. They don't want you to hear that. And that's why natural things like chiropractor are so effective, and people think of them as a lot of people think of them as kooks because the pharmaceutical companies are going to push them as such. They're going to say, no, you don't want to take the natural medicine route. You don't want homeopathic stuff. You want to go with our pharmaceutical stuff that we've invested millions of dollars into, and we can prove every single side effect, including death multiple times. But don't worry about that. We've got you covered. So, you know, that's essentially the mentality, like you're saying, the marketing side of it is if they can sell enough, like we can take care of your depression with this drug over here. Oh, you want to kill yourself? Don't worry. We've got something to bring you back to life over here. We'll put it all together in one fell swoop for you. Astounding to me because we have become the product. And that's what Facebook did. Facebook essentially stopped selling products to advertise their page and made the average consumer the product. They addict you to social media in the fact that you cannot turn it off, and now you are essentially the very product that they are turning around and selling. They're utilizing you. They're gearing to you by narrowing in and honing in on what you click on and what you subscribe to and what you like. Now they're going to target you in marketing to get you to buy more things. It's the same thing when it comes to pharmaceuticals. They're narrowing you into a box and saying, we know that you have this box, this box, this box, all checked. Now we can add these things to it and double our income off of you. So...
Yeah.
Did you ever vicious cycle?
Did you ever hear about the great zebra striped underwear project?
No.
Before we get to Bianca, I'm gonna do this. We were talking exactly about this, and we're talking about the marketing. I said the product is you. You know, you're giving your personal information in exchange for being able to use social media. So I said, let me inquire about a product online that I will never wear, that I have no interest in, that is just totally, you know, foreign to my nature, being just a regular dude, right? I said, I looked up zebra striped underwear. Okay, this is just as a joke, right? And I told the audience, I said, how long do you think it's going to be before I see an ad for zebra striped underwear on Facebook or in my news feed or something like that? It was 30 minutes. And that was a couple of years ago.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
It's probably like 5 minutes now, you know. But yeah, and all of a sudden, and for the next 3 months, I kept seeing ads for zebra striped underwear. It was hysterical. Well, but that's how I did it.
Oh yeah, and it's not even just Facebook. If your phone listens to you, like I've had my phone sitting next to me or in the same room, and I've had a conversation with my husband or another person, and I'll be like, hey, do you want to take a look at maybe redoing the shed? Maybe we need a new lawnmower. Or hey, let's take a look at getting some cement blocks for the edging of our garden or whatever. The next thing I know, I turn on my phone and Google has a search on the top 5 best concrete edgers. It's like, what in the world? I was just talking about it and my phone wasn't even on.
Yeah, it was.
It's crazy.
Your phone's always on. Unless your phone's off, it's on.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. Mm. But it's more effective than Facebook in that sense that you don't even have to type in the search for it. It hears you and it automatically feeds it to you.
Yeah, I've never had that happen. But one of the things you might want to do, too, is I always have a little cardboard business card over the camera on my computer. So it never photographs me unless I want it to. It just shows up. And I have to remove it sometimes when I do Zoom calls. I keep forgetting because it's like always there. But there's little things like that you can do. I mean, turn your phone physically off. You know, when you're
right.
having conversations. I don't have a lot of conversations here because I'm the only one here, and I don't talk to myself that loudly, so it's not an issue. So and everything I say, you know, pretty much goes out over the air. So,
right.
That's public anyway. Yeah. Pianki, let's get you in the conversation here. What you've been sitting patiently. What do you think of all this?
Well, Blog Talk is acting crazy, so I have to listen on an expensive cell phone and pipe and Blog Talk. But, you know, you talk about these phones, and I ask people, we know the history of Verizon and their cooperation with U.S. intelligence, providing information and so on. So why do you continue to use their service, paying them money?
Mm-hmm.
If I come, I switch to a patriotic company that supports programs to prevent U.S. veterans from committing suicide.
Yeah, Marco made a comment on that from the Netherlands. He says, "Are you getting paid for this? You've always paid that." So we got to get
No, not really.
Oh, I know that, but
what I'm saying
is, call Pure Talk since you're a customer of theirs. No, I'm serious. Call Pure Talk, tell them about what we do here, and see if they want to sponsor the show.
Yeah,
I'll create an ad for them.
I'm going to do that.
I'll get for them. Yep. Very good.
I just like to use logic.
No, it makes sense. No, I understand. Mm-hmm. There's another one too. There's a Patriot Mobile. There's another patriotic phone
Patriot
service.
Mobile.
Yeah, I would use them. I got to investigate them, but I have my internet and my phone tied together, and I have a nice Ethernet connection, so it actually works out pretty well. But, so those things are all worth looking into. Okay, so, Pianki, did you have another question? I know you've been typing madly away on live chat. Anything else you want to get into?
No, I don't have any questions. I'm just listening. It's a good conversation.
Okay.
Yeah, well, nobody's looking into this stuff. So let's think. We got a few minutes here, and then I want to play because Block Talk may have changed their procedure. That's probably what they were doing yesterday morning when they shut down the website. They may limit us to 3 hours now, so I have to get my ads and stuff in beforehand. But so I'll probably stop you about 5 minutes early and play a couple things. But anyway, this is fascinating. So where do you think? Let me ask you, where do you think Israel is going to go with this? How far do you think they're going to take this response? And did they let this happen, like I think Roosevelt let Pearl Harbor happen, to get us in World War II? Is this the excuse that Israel has been looking for so they could clean out Gaza and take back the West Bank and go on and make a peaceful country out of Israel?
That's an interesting question. I literally had not given thought to that. I really did not think Israel would ever allow anything to happen intentionally because they're such a fierce defensive country.
Unless,
but that's an interesting thing to think about, to clean out Gaza. Obviously, unless there's a bigger picture
sympathy,
there.
Yeah, and world sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be. You know, now we got the Hamas lobby in this country, but world sympathy was with Israel initially as victims of an attack. See, Israel, if you're in that position where the world's against you, the UN's against you, the United States is for you, except when Democrats are in office, they're pretty precarious mm-hmm. position. So they have a lot of resources, and I believe they have nuclear weapons. They don't want to use them. If every other nation attacks them, they might. if Iran starts aiming nukes at Israel, they're going to get nuked. And we don't want that.
Of course.
If I were Israel, and as I talked about this with Bill and Wendy, that my program is one state. It's more land for more peace. More land equals more peace. The more of that land that's Israel – the more peaceful it's going to be. So Gaza, Golan, and West Bank have to go. Israel has to take those over again, incorporate them back into Israel. I would consider the Sinai too, although I think Egypt hasn't really been a problem of late, unless they're supplying, Hamas. Now, is Egypt supplying Hamas with anything? Hamas being an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood.
I would almost, without a doubt, have to say yes. I really think they are.
So how are they getting it there? Now, is Gaza connected to Egypt, or is it a separate piece of land?
I know it's a border. I may have to dig into that.
Yeah. Why Israel gave up this land, I have no idea. What kind of idiots were they? You know, you don't get peace when you give up land. You get people that want more land. You know,
and Egypt does control the Gaza Strip southern border because they have an agreement with Israel to do so. So essentially, why would, if they have an agreement to that they have the southern part of it, it seems to me mm-hmm. logical that they are going to keep having issues and probably supplying Hamas so that eventually they can take the entire Gaza Strip and not just the southern border. You know what I mean?
So if Gaza became part of Egypt then, for example, and it was mm-hmm. they had Egyptians living there as opposed to mm-hmm. imaginary Palestinians living there, would that be a totally different mm-hmm. situation? Now, Hamas wouldn't want that because they want Palestinians. They want people. They want people to in order to take over Israel. Egypt, as far as I know, doesn't want to take over Israel. They're actually coexisting rather well, and they're getting money for it. They're getting $3 billion a year from the United States.
But the question is, does Egypt want to have a close relationship with Iran? What is the distinct relationship between Egypt and Iran? What do they have to gain by having close ties to Iran? Because Iran and Egypt are pretty separate. I mean, they're not opposite sides of the world, clearly, but they're clearly different countries. So
there's another difference,
Egypt
too.
Recognizes, yeah. What's that?
Well, Egyptians are Arab and Iranians are Persian. They're totally different people. They're not related.
That's true, but there's still a lot of Muslims.
Okay, let's go Pianki and then Bonnie. Pianki, what are you saying?
They're tied together by religion, just like Europeans are tied together with Christianity.
Yeah, but Christianity has a bunch of different branches. You've got Eastern Orthodox, you've got Roman Catholic, you've got Protestant. In Islam, we've got Shiite and we've got Sunni, and I don't know if there are any other branches in there. Now, I don't know which is which. I think Iran
There's
is
others.
Shiite Muslim. I think Egypt is Sunni Muslim.
Well, yeah, but blood is thicker than water.
Well, that's true. So Egypt may have more in common with Iran than Israel, but would it not be more in Egypt's interest to deal with a prosperous and free and economically, progressive Israel that might help Egypt technologically in other ways to help them be a better country than they would from Iran, which would want Egypt to be part of Iran, or something like that?
Well,
to
understand it all, you can't start in the middle of the book. You have to go back to the beginning of the book. Today's Egypt is not that of pharaonic dynastic times. That area goes back almost to 10,000 BC when there was none of these other Western religions.
Yeah.
And then you can better understand it.
Yeah.
But people
I'm going to hold up. Yeah, I want to hold up now because I want to take a couple minutes and play some stuff. I want to get Bonnie's contact information. But also, Pianki, I invite you to spend an hour with Ancient History and tell us everything that you've been commenting on a little bit and typing in live chat, because I think it's fascinating. And I think we need to do that. But I do not set up intentional conflicts and debates on the show, because I don't think it's as productive as just allowing people to express everything that they want to say, because I'm not doing this for, conflict ratings. I'm doing this to get information out. So, Bonnie, let's get your information. Let's talk about Fern Radio
sure. And
anything else that's going on.
Yes,
and then
yes,
I'm going to play a couple quick commercials, and then we'll get to Bianca von Krieg and a very special guest.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, you can find me Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on WFRN.com. You can listen live from anywhere in the world, where I host the Saturday Midday Show and talk about all kinds of things that are encouraging and helpful to anyone who is in discouraging times, which we are all in. So you can find me there, and you can also find my cookbooks at Amazon or at my website, www.bonnie-appetit.com.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you next week with more questions and more answers. Thanks, Bonnie.
As always, thank you, Greg.
All right, you're welcome. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. All right, so Bianca Von Krieg on the line. Time for the Progressive Report. I made a theme for you. Are you ready?
Giddy up.
All right. And now a little West Coast sophistication for Action Radio. Where else can a progressive, socialist, trans actor, political activist, and candidate from San Francisco meet on the air with an anti-federalist, individual rights, free market citizen legislator in Florida? Agree or disagree? And we do. It's always fascinating. So join us now, please, for the Progressive Report with Bianca Von Krieg.
That's nice, Greg. Thank you. I like
it. Yeah. All right.
So some of the headlines for today we're going to be talking about. Bernie bust 50 of my peeps and are arrested in his D.C. office. Bianca for San Francisco's agents crash Feinstein funeral. Halt and catch strike fever San Francisco teachers have. Literal gate crasher at Chinese Communist Party. Man drives his car in the lobby of Chinese consulate in San Francisco. And Harry sent me the latest campaign message from Bianca for San Francisco exposes Nancy Pelosi as LGBT frenemy. All this and MAGA Mega Man Steve Stern on the Progressive Report with Bianca Von Krieg.
I love
Live
it.
Live from the left coast, it's the motherfucking revolution. I'm Bianca Von Krieg, and this is October 11th. Progressive Report.
Try to stay away from the F-bombs. Other than that, it's okay. I mean,
okay. Heard it wrong, Steve. I actually said mother hugging.
Oh, there we go. That's okay. No, Steve's the guy that's going to join us on Greg, but that's okay. So when's he calling?
Mother hugging revolution.
You can say that all you want. That's fun. That's funny. Is he calling in the top of the hour? Or did you tell him to call in a bit later? Because I don't know how much time.
Yeah, I think Steve should be calling in around 10 minutes past.
That's fine. Okay, that's good. That gives us a chance to chat a little bit. Okay, so as usual, you have completely different headlines than anything anybody else has on the show, which is great, which is a big reason you're on. So where do you want to start? I'm kind of curious about this Chinese consulate.
Okay.
That strikes me as interesting.
Yeah.
So tell me the story.
Yeah, it's so the guy drives his car straight into in the Chinese consulate. There's kind of like this one of these like metal garage doors, you know, those things that retract, or they put them on storefront sometimes. Mm-hmm. So they have that, and that and then there's that, and there's maybe some glass doors, and it just enters right into their main lobby. A guy drove his car completely through that. I only thought that was something that could happen in the movies. And you know, I also heard reports
what
you might
kind of car
to
was
order
this?
A Big Mac. You know,
is this an SUV? Is this something large? Are we talking about?
No. It was ironically an Asian car, which, you know, my cell phone has
Japanese
steel in it. Yeah.
Japanese car rams Chinese consulate. Just for folks to get an idea of this, where is the Chinese consulate in San Francisco? Because it's not downtown. People think of like this, you know, like in Washington, they have an Embassy Row. No, these things are in some of the really nice houses. Russian Embassy is a gorgeous house in Pacific Heights. It was a part of my tour. I used to go drive by it. Anyway, go ahead. Where's the Chinese consulate?
It is actually in all places in Japantown.
I was joking about that earlier.
I'm not kidding.
So wait a minute. Okay,
no,
this is San Francisco for those who don't know. So the Chinese consulate is in Japantown. Where's the Japanese consulate? You know, next to Sam Wo's?
Maybe in Chinatown. I don't know.
That's what I was thinking.
Everyone's on a wild safari today.
That's funny.
The police are pretty hush-hush about it, but the witnesses say the police wouldn't say who killed him. Witnesses say they saw SFPD do it. And that the security guards at the consulate actually tried to calm the guy down. Apparently, he suffered head injuries and was actually yelling. You know, he was saying, "I'm looking for the CCP." Well, I guess he found it.
That would be Beijing.
He was,
you know,
Beijing.
As for Xi Jinping, and good luck with that.
Well, he had a concussion, I presume. So.
Well, that's no excuse. So we got a Japanese car. Now, who was the driver? What was his background?
They're not saying yet.
Black guy, white guy, Asian guy,
no.
Jewish guy. Who is it?
None.
You know?
None of that.
Uyghur?
None of that.
Uyghur? No. Tibetan?
Nope, nothing.
Richard Gere?
No, nothing.
No, I'm just checking. Okay, fine.
I'm going to say no.
Somebody in an Asian vehicle rams the Chinese consulate. Was there a declaration? Was there a manifesto? Was there anything? No.
Nope. Just.
Why
just
now? Chinese holiday.
Who knows? There was also a guy drove his tractor trailer straight into the toll plaza at the San Rafael Richmond Bridge. It blocked up. So I don't know. Maybe they figure with the stuff in Israel, stuff is catching on. Along Jewish stuff, 50 anti-war.
Go ahead.
So 50 anti-war protesters, my people, descended on Bernie Sanders' D.C. office last week to demand that they stop funding Ukraine. Apparently he tolerated them for them, and they were eventually arrested and hauled off. My message to Bernie, let my people go.
Now, which Bernie is this again? I was momentarily
Bernie Sanders.
Stuff here. So Bernie Sanders is in
Bernie
San Francisco
Sanders.
Now? He has an office?
No, this is a D.C. office.
Oh, it's D.C. office, okay.
Yeah.
So what's he doing? He lives in Vermont, I thought. So what's he doing in D.C.? He's not in office. He's not in the Congress.
No, but he does have a Senate seat.
Oh, is he the senator? He's still a senator from Vermont?
Yeah, he's a senator.
Okay, sorry. So I was wrong on that. All right, so that makes sense. Yeah, okay, so that would explain him being in Washington. So the protesters were saying stop all funding for Ukraine? I agree.
Yeah. Because that's one thing progressives and you know Freedom Caucus have in common.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want endless wars and we certainly don't want to pay for it when our people are struggling and striking every which way from Sunday, which brings us to our next thing. San Francisco teachers today are voting on whether or not to strike. Apparently, strike fever has caught, you know, catched on to San Francisco. They have such frivolous demands like food and shelter. So we'll see how that plays out.
Well, how much do San Francisco teachers make? And how much they make? And we can do it with the cost of living, because cost of living in San Francisco is prohibitive. So do teachers
live
there?
That's a great question. I didn't look that up.
Okay.
It's in the – I think it starts – don't quote me on this, but I think it starts around the, like, 70s or 80s or something like that. And obviously,
that's still,
you know,
not a lot for
tenure.
San Francisco.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not. It really isn't. And so the city will most likely, what they attempt to do is the same thing they did over the COVID summer, and attempt to just villainize teachers. And as we all know, teachers have had it too good for too long with their mega mansions and Lamborghinis. So,
well, there's a counter to that
somebody
too,
has
because
to take
teachers.
Them down a peg.
Yeah. So, but I have a little difference though, because teachers, you know, the salaries aren't huge, but the pensions are, and most people don't get pensions. The benefits are really good, and I don't begrudge that, because I was a Teamster, I got fabulous benefits too. I think if you can negotiate that, no problem. But the biggest thing with teachers is they only work 180 days a year. The school year is maybe 180 days a year. That leaves almost 180 days or 175 days that they can also work. Now, I work 7 days a week, but that's my choice. I don't expect people to do that.
Yeah.
But a standard salary job, 40 hours a week, which I would like to see in 4-10s. I don't know how that would work for teachers, but that'd be interesting. Maybe we could structure a school day that that's a 4, you know, 4-10 or a 4-8 or something like that. But teachers are not doing as badly as people think. Because they only work 180 days a year, they could consult, they could work, they could bartend. I know teachers used to bartend, actually. There's a lot of jobs that teachers could do the other 180 days of the year. And people forget that. So there's a little bit of a sympathy gap for me just because of the opportunity to earn money during the summer. You know, writing, they could write a book in those 6 months they have off. There's a lot of things teachers could do.
Did you say 6 months? You meant 3 months, right?
No, they get 6 months off, because if you're, they get 180 days on, 180 days off, 360, you know, roughly 365 days a year, plus holidays, weekends, things like that. In other words, let me put it this way. They've got a lot of time off. The school year is only 180 days. So
well,
there's a lot
a
of time
job,
to work.
To be sure, I would say.
What's that?
I would say it's a thankless job nonetheless. And, you know, I think everybody here could use a boost, including them. So we'll see how that goes with them. Feinstein did not have such a great send-off. Some of my people crashed the funeral. Pelosi got herself a San Francisco salute. Other people denounced Feinstein's selfishness and hubris. If you go to our Instagram page, you can see a picture of a woman holding a sign that says, if you want people to feel sad when you die, then maybe retire before you go senile.
Hey, listen, I got to hold you for a sec. Steve's here.
Okay.
So I just wanted to let you sum up your point, and then we'll get to him. He's got a different number than I expected. So if I'm wrong, we're going to find out real fast. Let me just find out just to make sure here. So is this Steve Stern?
Okay.
That's me.
Okay, good. Well, in that case,
hey,
we're going to welcome you the traditional Action Radio way.
Yeah, sorry. I couldn't find the number. It got deleted out of my thing. I had to go through
kinds
of stuff to get it.
Well, I'm glad you did, because I really want to talk to you.
Sure.
Anyway, I've watched all your videos, but let me give you our traditional welcome, because you are the guest of the day, Steve Stern. So I only recently became familiar with you, which I don't know how we missed each other, but Bianca's the one that brought you to my attention. And I'll give you a little bio for everybody, give everybody a bio. We have a patriot, an entrepreneur, a political activist, and campaign strategist, created Precinct Strategy, the flagship company. He knows everybody in the America First movement that I want to get to know, including President Trump. And I want to know how you and Bianca cross paths. This to me is fascinating, because you're a conservative patriot and then Bianca's a progressive socialist. So how did you guys get connected?
Well, I think through Tina Saline. I'm not 100% sure. You know, what happened was I was on Steve Bannon about six months. Well, I've been on a lot, but I was on his show about 6 months ago. And Tina Saline called me and asked me if I could get involved in California and helping them to turn California red. So I said, well, I'd be glad to help. And I started calling people all over California. She gave me tons of people. So that's how we probably got connected. But I speak to so many people that sometimes, you know, I'm 82 years old. I've been doing this for 20 years, involved with so many people, you know, and sometimes you don't even remember how you got connected. So,
okay, I have the same thing too, and I'm only 63. Yeah. So, but let's give you a round of applause for everything you're doing. There we go. So that's for you, Steve.
Thanks. Well, thanks for having me, and hopefully we can answer some questions and we can get people to join in. And, you know, some of the things I know you do, you work on the border, and that's I've worked with Tom Holm and Tom Trento in trying to close the border. You know, I've probably been on 100 different podcasts and TV shows. And, you know, what I do is a little different than a lot of other people. I'm old school. So I put my name and number and email up, and people call.
Yeah, give it now. Give it now if you want. Yeah,
sure.
I've got them already, but feel free.
Right. So if anybody wants to connect me, and I'm going to give you a lot of information today, you can go on three different areas. You can go first. You can give me a call at 954-318-6902. You can go to the Flagshirt. We're the largest patriotic website in the world. You can go to info@theflagshirt.com, or you can go to www.theflagshirt.com. And the best thing to do would be to email me, because I wake up about 4:30 in the morning and I answer emails. So it's S Stern, that's S-S-T-E-R-N 1054@gmail.com. And what I do is when I get up there, I answer everybody's call, because there's so many questions that people have and they can't get answers. And if I don't have the answer, naturally I don't have all the answers. I send them over to a lot of people, because I work with General Flynn, Mike Davis, Colonel Mills, many, many, many people around the country. And, you know, we try to get the answers. So we hold an election integrity. We've changed it to election security Zoom meeting. And how did that happen? We started with our precinct strategy Zoom, which I'll let you know what that is. Everybody, you know, you would think that everybody knows what precinct strategy is, but they don't. So precinct strategy is basically the Republican Party. There's 200,000 slots. When we started, with Dan Schultz wrote the book on why people should get involved. And if you go to www.precinctstrategy.com, it gives you all the information with every state on how to get involved and how to become a committee man or a committee woman. And what does that mean? So when you become a committee man or committee woman, and in California, you belong to the central committee, and they're going to be elected soon. So we want people to start to go on there to get rid of some of the rhinos and the establishment people that have controlled California for so long. And when you become a committee man and committee woman, you attend meetings, you vote, you sign up voters, but the most important thing is to get candidates elected. So we know that that's important today, especially in California. And I got involved with a super PAC that anybody that's listening can get a candidate supported. And if you go to our super PAC, DrainTheSwampUSA.com. That's DrainTheSwampUSA.com. It's We the People, and it's MAGA America First. So those are the people going to be vetted, and it drives people to campaigns. We place ads for them, emails, text, and it gets you to know your local state national candidate, which I think is one of the most important things, because everybody keys on the President of the United States, but they forget a lot of times our congressmen, our senators, our mayors, our commissioners, our school board members. All this is important, and it takes a lot of money to do this, and a lot of the people in California call me and ask me, you know, how do we do this? So we give them plenty of information, and let's get back to these Zoom meetings. When I was with President Trump here back in November, and I went there specifically for a reason. It took me 6 months to get an appointment, and two of them were canceled. But I did get in to see him a number of times after that. And the main thing was to get him to talk to people to get involved at his rallies. Now, he promised to do that during this 45-minute conversation where he actually endorsed one of my candidates. But he hasn't done that yet. So we're taking it upon ourselves now to try to get people involved. And the main reason is, as we know, the border's open, and look at the war that's going on with Israel now. The same thing could happen here. Colonel Mills told me he was down in Panama, and the Chinese are establishing camps down there to train people. What do you think they're going to train them for? What do you think they're going to train them for in Cuba? Why do you think the 100 or 150,000 people that we don't know that entered the United States are trying to do? Now, if we don't wake up soon, we're going to be Venezuela. So we have this Zoom meeting on election integrity pretty much between every week and every 2 or 3 weeks, and we have the cream of the crop on there. We've had Joe Von Pulitzer, Cleta Mitchell, Dr. Frank, Mike Lindell, Heather Honey, Dr. Robert Epstein. That's a big name that everybody should know and listen about because he's in California and San Diego, and I went out to see him a couple of weeks ago. And why did I go to see him? Because he has said something that everybody's got to know what happened. He was on Cleta Mitchell's Zoom. I brought him on our Zoom, and then I went to see him. And what he said as a Democrat, and I asked him, well, why are you doing this as a Democrat? Because he says he wants to see free elections. He has said and he has proven that Google has swayed last election with Biden between 2 and 5 million votes. Now, people want to know how that happened. So the independent voter looked up all these type things, and, you know, they –
I'm getting background noise from somebody.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, is that you? Oh, okay.
Not me.
Yeah, the microphone picks up everything, so if the dog barks, we'll hear it.
Sorry about
that, guys.
If your wife
says, dear, you're late for whatever, we'll hear it anyway.
So I think this is, you know, this is one of the most important things that Google swayed the election. Here everybody says, you know, something's wrong with the election. There's been, you know, ballots are screwed up and et cetera, et cetera. And we know a lot. And when you talk about this, and unfortunately his wife got killed. He was called about 4 months ago and said somebody in your family is going to get killed. And so he has 11,000 people working for him. And these are some of the things that we try to bring up to people to so they understand what's going on. So the rest of the people that are on there are Raj Dijami, who hosts this with me, Linda Sinkowitz, who has taken people off the voter rolls. She has 22,000 people off the voter rolls. Linda Payne down in California, Terry Raposa in California, who got the the machines out in the county. Marley Hornick, who was audit in New York, Melanie Clark, Kathy Harms, and on and on. We've had over 100 different speakers, and we get anywhere from 300 to 800 people. So anybody, again, who's interested in coming on that is certainly welcome. So some of the people ask me,
I want to be on.
How did I
– you know, I'm going to shock all
some of
you.
People,
well, let me save you a little time here because I want to tell you what we do. Because this is – just as you are unique, this show is unique on the planet. We are the only show that has a citizen legislature. We actually write bills a lot of times on the air. I mean, I teach people how to do this. And we've solved, I think, many of the problems that you're working on. But I don't get invited to speak. You know, I think there's one of the biggest problems in the America First movement is that they don't want to solve the problems. They just want to talk about them and keep doing events and making money. So we have – Bianca, believe me, I'm going to give you a chance here, but I want to get this bill out. We wrote a bill. Actually, one of my reporters wrote it, who does our election integrity report. It's called the Florida Election Integrity Bill of 2023. And here are the main points of it. Zero machines of any kind allowed in the polling place. Pre-printed paper ballots only. Paper ledgers only. All poll workers bonded. Videotape of all ballot counting. 1,000 people or less per precinct so we can get the results by midnight. Here's the thing that I added to it. Voter registration expires at midnight every year on December 31st. The rolls are self-cleaning. Everybody has to re-register. That's our bill. That's basically everything you're talking about, and we already have it in a bill. You can use it at the county level, the city level, the state level. It wouldn't be federal because federal doesn't control the elections. But we've already got the bill for you. It's already done.
And
Steve?
Where are you putting that bill? Where are you doing this at?
WriteYourLaws.com. That's our main website.
What state? What state are you in?
I'm in Florida. So this is written for Florida, but I'm in Milton next to Pensacola. But it's applicable to any state. Oh, well, we're
I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
Sort of. Well,
yeah,
not quite.
Right.
Okay.
All right. I didn't catch your name when you first came on. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Greg Penglis, P-E-N-G-L-I-S. And so our website is writeyourlaws.com. I'm going to email you. I'll email you all the details. I've got a bunch of bills for
100%.
You. Let me give you one more, and then I want to get to Bianca. Here's the other one that's huge. The other one I think you'll find fascinating. Bianca doesn't like this one. She says it's a non-starter, but I think it's going to be critical. It's a constitutional amendment. Congress shall not have the power to borrow money. This is how simple this is. It's constitutional, and it takes away the power of Congress to borrow money. Everybody's saying, oh, what is Steve Bannon? I got to get this to Steve Bannon. Everybody talks about, you know, the national debt's a huge problem, and it is. It's economic suicide. But no one knows how to solve it. This balanced budget amendment's not going to work because it has an emergency escape clause. So here's what I wrote. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution shall be amended by striking Clause 2 to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Section 8, Clause 1 shall be amended by adding at the end, and Congress shall have no power to borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor to print money to cover expenses, nor authorize the purchase or holding of securities, nor to authorize or permit any central bank, nor to allow any control of money beyond Congress. How's that for a bill?
Sounds good. And you know what? I'm glad mm-hmm. to, you know, that's one of the things that I do. We have probably over 200 podcasts that we circulate through our people to get them on. So we're happy to get you on since you didn't get on. We start with the lower people first and move you up as people, you know, like it. And we're glad to do that. I just got about 30, 40 people on different shows over the last few weeks. And I'll be speaking this week at Clay Clark event down in Miami. Which General Flynn was nice enough to get me to speak because it was tough to get in there.
Yeah, I want
but
to talk
we
to
also
too.
Are going to, yeah, Raj and I are going to have a booth and interviewing people and also doing interviews. The thing we do differently is we set these interviews up before, where a lot of people do it afterwards. But also, I just came back from Clay Clark in Las Vegas, and I learned something. You know, one thing, the older you get, the more you have to learn because nobody knows it all. So when I was out there, there was a gentleman, his name is Paul Bodine, and he's a precinct captain in Las Vegas. And, you know, we talked for a while, and I'm standing there, and I see people coming up to the booth and say, hey, we want to get involved. And so I asked him, well, wait a minute, don't you know that there's a Republican Party in your county and you could become involved? He said, well, we really didn't know that, or if we knew that, we didn't really get involved. So I said to myself, wow. If this is happening, we got to set up tables at every event, and that's what we're doing. We're putting a Republican table here at the Clay Clark event here in Miami. We've already got about 100 people coming in to sign up, and we're starting to do this all over the country because if we don't get the people to work now, precinct strategy in the Republican Party has 400,000 slots. There's 210,000 people involved. That's ludicrous. Mm-hmm. We have 60 million voters. Where the hell are all the other people? Now, you know that these things don't happen until the country goes down the tube. Now, we're slightly down the tube now, as we all know, because gas prices, if you're in California, are like $6.50 a gallon and high in other places, and people can't afford their rents anymore because by the time you take their salary and you have to pay rent, you got to pay electric, which is skyrocketing, all these other costs, food costs and everything else. So you would think that people want to get involved. And that's the worst thing that we have right now. We're just not getting enough people involved. Sure, I go on TV and I get, you know, 40, 50 people involved. But we're talking about this country. And, you know, my dad told me about the Depression. And many of our kids have no clue what a Depression can happen. And we don't think that, you know, things can happen. But I'm going to tell you, and if you listen to a lot of the shows and you look at economists, what they're saying, that, and I don't know if you were around when interest rates were 18%, but they're going to go up, and they're going to continue to spiral because our debt is so far out of control, it's ridiculous. So we have to get people involved. And, you know, I did a program here, which I'm glad to send you, for Flag Day, since, you know, the flag shirt is our country.
Oh, I saw the website. I've seen, like, four of your websites. I was going over them this morning, yeah.
Right. So what happened was my son asked me to do a little program for Flag Day. Well, I don't do things little. So I said to myself, okay, I got to do this. So I dropped everything I was doing, and I started calling people to attend this particular event. I called Mike Lindell. He said, sure, I'll go on. He said, not only that, for your birthday, I'm going to give you a present. I'm going to put you on a network. So I said, whoa, this is pretty big. So I talked to Brandon House, who's his producer for TV.
He's been on. And he's been on the show.
Right. So. Yeah. So he said, sure, but he said, I'm busy, and I'm not sure how much I can do to help you, but I'll do it. So 4 weeks went by, and really nothing happened, and I was, you know, getting kind of crazy here because I started lining up speakers, and I had 60 speakers already, and I'm going to tell you who was on there and what happened. So Brandon said, well, give me everything today, and I'll do it. I said, wait a minute, Brandon, we can't do everything in one day. So I called up Mike's secretary, and I said to Mike's secretary, hey, listen, I've got a guy that's going to produce it for us, you know, and you guys just host it. So about 30 minutes later, Mike calls me up, and he gets Brandon on the phone. I said, look, Brandon's very busy. I got Jovan Pulitzer who's going to produce it. So he produced it, and it was unbelievable. So we had General Flynn open up. We had Tom Homan, Sebastian Gorka, William Federer, Lee Greenwood. Lee Greenwood sang a song. Steve Bannon came on. We had flag experts. We had Chanel Rion from One American News. We had General Malloy, who ran for Congress, Mike Lindell, Clay Clark, John Fredericks, Mel Kay, and many, many, many people. So this thing went viral, and we thought we'd have about 30, 40,000 people watching. Well, it's gone through 1 million already, and it's still going because we keep sending it out because people ask for it. And we already have people that ask for going on next year. And a lot of these people have said stuff exactly what we're talking about today. You know, how are we going to change the elections? How are we going to make America great again? And, you know, we see these things happening. So unless people get involved, I just did a 45-minute interview with Moms for America. They got 500,000 people. We did that yesterday. It's going to appear. They're going to try to help us. Some of the things that will help your listeners also, we have a guy in San Diego called TotalNews.com. I don't know if you know who they are, TotalNews.com. Total News will put your show on live. They'll put all kind of different interviews on there. They have a huge following. They have a big the news every day. And then we have another guy in Palm Beach, which is in our state, yournews.com. Yournews.com is the same thing. So we can get a lot of information out that, you know, that other people can't do. Another thing I'm going to give you, Michelle Swinnick, I don't know Michelle. She's on Bright Tee on TV. She hosts many, many podcasts and stuff with me and also hosts our Precinct Strategy Zoom when we have it. We started a website called SaveMyFreedom.us. That's SaveMyFreedom.us. And what that's going to do is that's going to help us with some of the things that you're talking about, getting rid of the machines. She's working out in Arizona 12 hours a day along with Lindell and everybody else. So these are some of the things that we're doing. And what I always do is I stand for all the people that are working 12, 14 hours a day. A lot of people ask me how I'm able to do this. How am I able to do what I do?
Do you love what you're
and
doing?
It's very simple.
I mean, obviously. Yeah.
Well, it's more than that. My dad, and I do a little story, but I'll just give you a quick story. When I was 12 years old, I wanted to go to the Brooklyn Dodger games. I had 25 cents in my pocket. I asked my dad for 20 bucks. I bought greeting cards. Long story short, I couldn't sell any. I came home. I started crying, and my dad said, just do it. So I did it. I won't go through the whole story, but this is a story that people have to get things accomplished. You can't give up. So that's what I do. If I got to go see President Trump, I'm going to find a way. If I got to get a hold of Lindell, I'll do it. How did I do that? I picked up the phone, called him. He said, do I know you? I said, I saw you 2 years ago at an event. I said, but I love your towels. Well, you know, as a businessman, you always tell the other guy, hey, your product is great. So he said, well, what can I do for you? I said, do you know what Precinct Strategy is? He said, I do not. I started talking about it. He said, wait a minute, let me get one of my secretaries on that works with some of the things like that. We talked for an hour. He said, Steve, I want you and Dan Schultz on tomorrow my program. On the program, he endorsed it right away, and he has spread the word all over the place. So those are some of the things to do. And why I mentioned President Trump is because I work with him on his campaign. And I got to tell you a little story. I did a program on my birthday for my 81st birthday on Steve Bannon. And how did I get involved with Steve Bannon, who, like you said, you'd like to get on? About 3.5 years ago, I called Dan Schultz, who is the guy who started Precinct Strategy, and I told him what I did in Broward County. I was the membership director, and I had went from 100 people to 500 people, told him how I did it, and he said, oh, you got a great success story. He says, well, let me get you on. So I got on. And through that, I was on for my birthday after many, many times. And Liz Harrington saw the program, and she called President Trump up. And for my birthday, I got a nice letter, which came in two days after my birthday. But I'd like to read it, if you don't mind. It says, Dear Steve, we join your family and friends and wish you a happy 81st birthday. Our nation is strong because of hardworking patriots like you who believe in and defend the great American ideals of faith, family, community, and country. Let's think about that. Faith, family, community, and country. Your commitment is excellence and dedication is exemplifying to the American dream through ingenuity, hard work, and principled leadership in the foundation of your tremendous success and demonstrates the proud spirit of family-owned and operated businesses. As you celebrate this special day, we hope your heart is filled with joy, knowing you have experienced our country's greatest blessings, freedom, and the affection of your loved ones. Melania and I send you our very best for your continued health, happiness, happy birthday, and may God bless you and your family. Well, this is one of the greatest things of my life, you know, to get a letter from that from the president. And, mm-hmm. you know, he didn't know me from Adam, but he realized what we do. So fortunately, after that letter, I started working harder. Instead of getting up at 7 o'clock, I'm getting up at 4:30. And, you know, you can get a lot,
yeah,
of,
about my
a
time.
Lot of things accomplished.
Yeah.
And I'd like to
show,
tell you
so
about a guy in Texas.
Isn't this guy a pistol? I told you he was great.
Oh, no, it's great. No, I've watched all the videos. I just want to get Bianca in the conversation because I want to know how you two connected. We only have about 25 minutes left, and I have a couple more things
run
I want
over.
To see about, too. Yeah, all right. So Steve, you want to do this one story, and then I'll get to Bianca and find out how
I'd
you
like
guys got connected.
You know, I represent the people that work 12, 14 hours a day. Many of them don't get on TV, just like you said. And there's a guy in Texas, he wrote a book called The Five-Star Plan. Write that down, The Five-Star Plan. Why I like him, he wrote this, and it says, replacing politicians with patriots. So all the patriots out there, we got to get some of them to run for office. What he did was he drove 8 hours to speak to 16 people. Now, I say to myself, how many guys or women drive 8 hours to speak to 16 people to tell them to get involved? So through his efforts, he's got over 1,500 people involved in Texas. And, you know, Texas is naturally having problems with everybody coming in and all the people, you know, getting through there. So and one other person who I always bring up when I do this, because this is so important, besides our great Tina Celine in California, which you should have on because she knows everybody there.
No, I'm
she's
happy
getting
to.
Everybody. No. She's a fantastic girl. But we have a girl in New Jersey, which is a blue state like you guys, like California. Her name is Liz Nader. She started a club called Common Sense Club with 10 people a year and a half ago. It's up to 145,000 people. So if we can do that there, can you imagine what we can do all over? So, Bianca, give me a couple of questions. Let me answer some of your stuff. I'm happy to do that, and I understand we only got about 25 minutes, which is longer than I usually get on.
Oh, no. Well, normally we have overtime, but
no,
I
No, we
can
make run
sure
the show
because,
over a little bit because I –
Well,
I need
maybe
you guys,
not.
I need you guys to romance out and everything, and so I kind of planned for this. How I met Steve was we made an active effort to reach out to people like him. We're seeing a lot of things that we have in common. Like, you know, I don't stand for sanctuary cities. I think they're inhuman. I encouraged Trump to build the border wall. As a matter of fact, I wanted him to name it after Nancy Pelosi. And, And then no more green shirts for Ukraine. That sounds great. You know, we're sending $1 billion a week to Ukraine. That's got to stop. Defunding the police. How are we not getting together on that one? And justice for Ashley Babbitt and the January 6th detainees. A lot like Alan Dershowitz, who is just a diehard liberal like me, but he also believes that they have a right to due process, which they're not getting. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been in there almost 2 years and they haven't even had a bail hearing. What is that? So, and this actually started before Steve, when I approached the people who were doing the Newsom recall. And because the progressives were having a lot of problems with Newsom. He wasn't getting the wealth tax out. He was single-payer health was going down the tubes. And we were like, let's get this guy out of here. Let's get a progressive in. The recall gave us a perfect opportunity. And the leaders of that were very happy to work with us. And as a result, I got 500,000 California Democrats, that's a third of what we needed to sign the recall petition of Newsom and get him out. And we did hold the election. He managed to slink by somehow. But Steve was kind enough to allow me to come on as one of his calls, talk to Mike, and see if we could work together too. And we did make a couple of contacts from the call, so that was nice. But, you know, there are a lot of areas here. Politics is not a spectrum. It's a sphere. I've said that many, many times. You know, there are things that we intersect on and that we're happy to work about, you know, work with you guys on.
Well,
guys,
you're on the
show. Get the border wall.
You know, This is a fascinating, you know, meeting. I mean, the insights that you have in the Democrat Party, the Progressive Caucus, and everything else is invaluable. And the things that we do have in common, and we may have different reasons for doing it, you know, but it doesn't matter. But the goal is the same. We both love our country, and we want the best for it. We just have different ways of getting there. And that's really critical for folks to understand.
Yes.
Did you? I heard your call with Mike Lindell, but just a quick note to Steve. The reason I want to contact these people and get on their show is because we are so censored here. We're the only show that writes legislation. We're the only show that people can go to and learn to do it. And for our activists, we don't have meetings. We don't have clubs. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to pay dues. You don't have to listen to speeches. All I ask people to do is copy the links to the bills, send them into the appropriate legislature, and say, pass this bill. So this is all electronic. It's minimal fuss. There's no cost because everybody already has their computers and they have email. So whether it's media or whether it's Congress or your state legislature or local, county, city, you know, any of those things, anybody can copy a bill and send it in and say, pass this bill. We write them. We got it all set to go. So what Steve can do, if you can connect me with all these different groups and we get all these people sending in bills, you got a few million people sending in a bill on, say, tax liability.
Well, we can have you. We can have you come on our, on our Zoom meeting where we have between 200 and 800, depending on which will be a week from this coming Monday. So when you email me, you have my email address, right?
Yep. I'm going to email you after the show. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. You got it, of course. And you got my number also, so either one.
No, I'll be calling. That's why I don't worry about how much we talk about here, because we're going to be in touch. Yeah.
I'm a follow-through guy. That's the key. You know what I mean? People often say, I didn't believe you were going to call me back. You know, when I get on Bannon, you know, you could get anywhere up to 500 calls. I just call people back. And that's and how did that happen? When I joined the Republican Party in Broward County, well, I was a Republican, but when I joined the Broward Republican Executive Committee 20 years ago, I called, and it took 3 months before they answered my calls. I would call, leave messages, nothing happened. Then, until I got an application, was 3 months. So that's 6 months wasted on a guy that wants to, do this. So now I got in there, and I sat at the first meeting. Not a person came up to me, and I said, wait a minute, I'm coming in. I don't know what I got to do. Second meeting, same thing. So the third meeting, I went to the chairman, and I said, I would like to take over the membership committee. Oh, that's great. We don't have anybody that does that. I said, well, also I'd like to take over the phones because, you know, well, we don't have a permanent person. Well, what does that mean? Don't somebody answer the phones? So I picked up the phones, and it was 186 messages. So I called everybody back, and somebody feels, well, nobody's ever called
me
back.
My God.
So that's why I'm calling you back. And I said, out of that, we got 28 new members. So can you imagine? And you think this doesn't happen all over the United States. Now, it happens both in the Democratic Party and happens in the Republican Party. Because I get calls from people saying, nobody doesn't want to get me involved. Because, you know, power, you see what's happening with power. All over the world, people have power. And that power goes to the head. And this is what's happening with your, you know, whether it's
That's a great point, Steve, because that happened to us during the recall, too. The recall was very much a grassroots movement here in California, mostly by Republicans, but they weren't these kind of like deep state Republicans. They were just regular guys like you who were just upset about the way things are going in California. And it was very inclusive. Obviously, I was involved. I engineered a lot of the architecture and the strategy. But, you know, once things really started picking up steam, the party controllers in Sacramento got their hooks into things, and that's when they really started to push people out. We had Republican people, committee chairmen, county committee chairmen, calling in and say, I like this, I want to get involved. They were from Central California, which is like the breadbasket of the West Coast, and their big thing is water.
I'm very familiar with that because my son played tennis for Cal Irvine. So I used to go to L.A. and Newport and meet a lot of people that were telling me the same thing that you're saying. And I believe you guys won. I believe Newsom never had the votes, but I believe that some of the people got 8 ballots.
The thing was, Steve, is that they did a poll and it was in the high 60s or lower 70s. Of Democrats that said they wanted another choice besides Newsom.
That tells
they
you
wanted
right away.
Another
So we're working very hard in trying to get people off the voter rolls, dead people, everything else. I mean, I think that's one of the most important things because As you said, you know, that what you wanted to do, that people should have to, yeah, everything should be cleaned off at the end of the year, and you got to re-register, and that's the only way.
We do it for cars.
But,
you'd have to re-register your car every year. Why can't we register to vote?
Here's the problem, and I don't know if you noticed or not, but, you know, the Democrats have instituted a website where you can sign up to vote with just your last four digits of your Social Security number.
And that should be illegal.
We understand that they give... Right, yeah. and we understand that the illegals who are coming in are getting Social Security cards in some cases, and green cards, and they're able to vote. And in Texas, they're looking at maybe 50,000 people that have come in recently from this site. So nobody's talking about it. Is anybody saying anything?
Fix that.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before
on the show, right, Greg?
There's no
voter ID requirements in California. Anybody can sign up and give an address. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, too, this is something you really need to understand, is that these groups, these like so-called like minority political groups who are asking for open borders, they don't represent the minorities in question. If you're somebody who's here, especially if you're legally, they want closed borders, you know. They want benefits too, but they don't want open borders. That's a fallacy, and that's one of the things I wanted to stop.
Yeah, you watch. One of the things that's going to happen. You know that how many terrorists have slipped through this thing. I watch Ben Berquim and many of the people who are involved with the border and what's going on. And there's no way we've stopped terrorists from coming in. Well, what do you think those terrorists are going to do? I mean, so what's going to happen?
Nothing good.
When this happens, what happened in Israel the other day, that happens here, and all of a sudden there's different things happen, such as poisoning the water supply, cutting electric power, screwing up the tracks on major stations, all at one time on one day, and that can happen easily because our people, I don't know where our security is because, let's face it, if Israel didn't have security and know what was going to happen, certainly the United States has bigger capability and should have known what was going to happen. Now, we don't even know what happens in the United States because half of the stuff you're told is a lie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So how do we fix that?
That's one thing I get about you guys. You're pissed off because your government lies to you. I get that. I really do because, you know, they lie to us too. And we're mad as hell too. They've been lying to us. The media lies to us. We say that all the time I'm in every kind of political organization imaginable in the United States and California, and we're pissed off about these things too, because they're doing it to us too.
They're doing it to everybody because when they open the border, they just don't open the border for Republicans. They open the border for independents, for Republicans, non-affiliates, everybody. And why? Look, here's the worst thing: 100,000 people died from fentanyl. Where are all the mothers of the kids that died over the fentanyl? Why aren't they coming up on TV, radio, saying, hey, why are they letting the Chinese put all this fentanyl in? Chinese don't have to go to war. They're deteriorating the United States one day at a time, because what happens is when you owe $32 trillion, and I'm not the greatest economist, but look, I never borrowed a penny from the bank. I built my business without borrowing money. Yes, I needed a line of credit, but I never borrowed money. I did everything myself. And that's how you build a business, because, you know, when you need money, the banks won't loan to you. When you don't want money, then they want to give it to you. So the lesson in
that is
economics.
That's the rub right
the
there.
Government, the government owes $32 trillion. Sooner or later, when the interest rates get up to 10, 15%, how are you going to service that debt? People don't understand that. I mean, you know, we were paying zero.
We have a solution.
Okay. Right.
Stop Congress borrowing
money.
That's the solution.
There's no question about that. But will the solution be put in time to stop what's going on? Because $32 trillion, people don't even realize what $32 trillion is. They can't count past a million. Or they don't care. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because they're not paying. But what's going to happen when they pay? Don't they understand that when your debt gets out of control, all of a sudden inflation hits? And inflation is starting now. And, you know, everybody's just, you know, they're using the money that they've made. Look, we have a lot of wealth in this United States, and they're coming in and using a lot of wealth now. You go to Utah and you go to Colorado and you see people buying houses for millions and millions and millions of dollars that years ago were $200,000. And, you know, all these people are moving out of California, moving into these other states, and they're spreading their wealth out of California, where California is going to be in serious trouble because
they we're already there.
We're
already there. We've got 160,000 homeless people, and there's 77 out of California's 156 billionaires live right here in San Francisco. And I fought a major battle with – we formed a coalition with a lot of homeless groups out here in San Francisco to stop – we got an injunction to stop the city of San Francisco from doing street sweeps, which basically pushes homeless people into the gutter. And the reason why we did that is because – there are 40,000 vacant units in San Francisco. We have the money and the capacity to house people humanely, and that means getting them off fentanyl. And the city didn't want to do it. And the speech I made in front of the Ninth Circuit Federal Court here in San Francisco was, who are they going to blame now? There's no Republicans here. There's no MAGAs here. There's no Donald Trump. There's just the deep state dinos who are working for, you know, against our country's interests and against the will of the people. So it's, you know, that's what I'm trying to work with you guys on. Is like, we have a lot of common ground. We have way more than we realize, and we need
that's
to get action
focus
on.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that.
I mean,
the
city attorney finally admitted it would cost $1.5 billion to house them. Do it. We have a nearly $15 billion budget here in San Francisco. 77 billionaires. There's no excuse for that. The money's there, and we can do it. And we don't have to tax, you know, people like Steve or Greg or even, you know, their lawyers to do this. We can tax the uber rich. We can still have free markets. We can still have capitalism, and we can still do right by our fellow human beings. And that's what I'm
saying. How about all the billions that are going to our illegal aliens coming in, where we got people on the street, vets and everything else? They're getting free housing.
What did I say earlier? I said, Steve, build that damn wall. Build the wall. Build it high. You know, and I was, and Greg and I are both proponents of busing. You know, Greg was saying a couple weeks ago, we shouldn't bus them in. We should put trains in. And I agree with that because it made their mayor, you know, start to put his money where his damn mouth was. And now he looks like a fool in front of the nation. So I'm grateful to Santos, and I'm grateful to Abbott on that one. You know, and I'm
a
Democrat saying that.
Let's get on all those January 6th people who are rotting in jail and don't even get a day.
Well, they're political prisoners. But here's the
problem.
But
we're all
people. You know, Steve. If Trump holds a rally there, I'll bring some progressive congressmen to that. How's that sound? I would love to do that. I agree. I completely agree with you.
Let's talk about that real quickly, just because we have limited time here. That to Steve, do you see as I see that the places where the Progressive Caucus and the Freedom Caucus agree, we need to start talking, because it's not Democrat versus Republican anymore. It's deep state. It's the globalist deep state, corrupt state against those of us that love our country. And I can agree with a progressive that we both love our country and disagree with how to make it better. So, Steve, do you see the critical nature of this, and how can
100%.
We work with?
I said that from the beginning. I said first you take the independents and you take the non-affiliates, and then you come up to the Democrats who are not far left, because you know we have a far right, we got a far left, we got to get all the people in the middle where most people are, and we have to talk to them. And I got to tell you that General Flynn is getting a database of all Democrats, independents, and Republicans, and we'll come out to them doing exactly what you're talking about. So we're going to be talking about that on Saturday at Clay Clark, and, you know, invite anybody who's in Florida to come to the Clay Clark event. There'll be a ton of speakers. There's other events coming up, Turning Point. You know, we got to get the young people involved, and we got to get, you know, I work closely with Taya Boyer and Charlie Kirk in getting people involved. They have a lot of people going out.
I want them sending bills in. So, Steve, if you can imagine all the Turning Point folks, all the Moms for America and all these different groups, if these people would simply just on their computers take 2 minutes to copy the link to a bill, and we've got plenty of them. I'll explain them later. I'll send them to you. And just send it in. Send it to media. Send it to talk shows, podcast hosts.
Well, we'll get you on.
You know, we understand money's tough. If money's tough, you can't give.
But this doesn't cost anything.
Sharing a link doesn't cost anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree, Greg. That's a great idea.
That's why we set it up this way, so it would be easy to do. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sharing a link. It's just nothing, yeah. So get it out there. You know, if you can't give money, that's understandable. You know, we're all, you know, 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
Well, I hope Steve responds to the show. I'll talk to him off the air about that. But let me ask you one. Here's a big question. Because a lot of people focus on candidates and elections and things like that. And I made the decision years ago that as long as you have two parties controlling things, we don't have a choice in elections. We have a choice which the two parties give us. You know, and so I haven't written this bill yet, but I was thinking of writing a bill that nobody can belong to a party while they're in office or running for office. Now, the parties can obviously exist and spend lots of money on behalf of candidates, but if you're in Congress, you're representative to your party first over your constituents. So this is why I went to work with the laws, because if you change the laws and you set people free with good laws and good legislation, we have a bill that I think Bianca would love. There's no income tax withholding while you're earning your standard deduction amount. Why? Because that money is going to come back to you next year in the tax refund anyway. Why not give it to you up front and just not take it? So simple things like that. But the parties won't do that. The deep state won't. But as long as people are, let me sum this up here, as long as people are representative to their party first and to their constituency in the country second, we're going to have a problem. And so this is what focused on laws instead of on candidates and elections. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree, and I think we'll get you out there as many as you can so you can start to tell people this. You know what I mean? That's the whole key. You have some good points. The question is, if you don't get people elected that will support you, that's some of the big problems. You know, I think a lot of people that are running today will be behind you 100%. We just got to get them elected. I mean, we have a lot of people in Congress, as you see, who just want to do what they want to do. Like you said, the deep state. The deep state is getting deeper, and our patriots are getting – less and less, you know, we're getting less accomplished.
Well, this
see,
is
we're running out of time,
point.
So I want to just say I appreciate you having
sir.
Me on. I'm glad to come back on another time. And hopefully some of your listeners, again, will go to sstern1054@gmail.com or give me a call at 954-318-6902, and let's get involved. I always end up with action, 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 as you know when you're listening to my...
Well, you're on Action Radio, so you're in the right place, sir. Appreciate
you're
having
in the right
you
place, yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, Steve, real quick, I just, you know, one thing for Trump, I tell him I said to buck up, you know, the mopey Trump isn't doing it for me. I like cocky Trump, you know. Instead of like being, you know, all down about this, he should have a barbecue at the courthouse, you know, and just have.
Well, he's doing
a
lot of
carnival.
Stuff behind. Yeah, he's doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes you don't know about, you don't hear about. You know, there's a lot going on in Mar-a-Lago coming up with a lot of events, and he's doing a lot of this, what do you call it, club, his golf club. So he's doing a lot of that stuff. He's pretty visible right now, which is surprising with all the lawsuits and everything going on, how he even has time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I feel that actually would help him.
But,
by,
you know, the
having...
thing is, it's actually working for him. That's the thing.
Yeah.
He's actually getting more and more popular the harder they hit. So I understand it's annoying for him, it's hurtful, but at the same time, it's just demonstrating how much support there is for the guy out there. So
100%.
It's kind of a mixed bag, but
and we hear it all the time.
You know,
anyway, I got to run myself. I want to tell all your listeners that I've got a great program, and people can express their views, both Democrat, Republican, Independent, which is great. We need more radio and TV stations like that. So thank you again for having me. Any last questions? I gotta run to another show.
No, they're gonna cut us off here.
Actually,
anyway.
There's one rumor I have to dispel.
Go for it.
Have you ever been on an airboat chase with the late great Burt Reynolds?
No.
Okay, I thought that seemed a little out there. But thanks for being on. It was you're a good guy, Steve.
That's what my wife says.
I love it. Well, I'll be talking to you. I'll get you off the air, and we'll continue
it.
This. Steve, take care.
Righto. Bye-bye.
All right. Mm-hmm. Bye now. So, Bianca, first of all, thank you so much for bringing Steve on. That was fabulous. And secondly, we're about to find out.
I knew you guys would have like a bromance session, so I just...
We had a great time. Yeah, this was really fun. Well, I've always wanted to connect with the Trump campaign. I want to meet Donald Trump, not because I think he can help me like everybody else wants. They want something from him. I think I can help him. And so providing these bills, and I don't expect – nobody understands the bills first time because it's complex and there's a lot to it. But we're going to find out here in about 35 seconds whether we get overtime or not. I think they may have changed the rules of Blog Talk. So if we get cut off, we'll know for sure. You know, and if not, we get a little extended time. We're about to find out. 27 seconds. This is like waiting for the rocket launch, all right?
Okay. Anyway, well, in the meantime, I'd like to talk about like the Harry Sent Me campaign.
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
So just so your listeners know, in 1987, Nancy Pelosi stole her job from gay rights leader and Harvey Milk protege Harry Britt. He ran against her. She somehow managed to beat him. So this is the Bianca Von Krieg, Taylor Swift, Harry Britt, maybe why not shut up, 2023-24 revenge tour. That's what this is going to be. This is the Harry Sent Me revenge tour of Harry Britt.
Okay. I think we have overtime. You're still on. I'm still on. Then I guess we have overtime.
I'm still on. Okay.
They didn't change it. Okay, so that's good to know. So then I don't have to jam in my ads and announcements during the show. So this is really good. I'll check the podcast just to make sure. But yeah, so now we have some extra time.
And it was
Steve,
nice having Steve
interview.
On too.
Well, he's fabulous.
Yeah,
it's interesting that he and I heard all those same stories on other podcasts. So he's so used to telling them. I wanted to get beyond the stories and really – this is why the last half hour I think was better than the first half hour. Although the stories are important, it's good for people to know who Steve is. I had no idea. How I missed him, I don't know. But I just completely – our paths have not crossed.
He's very popular in the hard right media outlets like Steve Bannon's channel on – I think it's RAR or America's Voice.
You know, I may have even seen him and not known it. But because I'm so involved in my own show. That I mean, people send me.
If you're
working
7 days a week, you are.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of it. Plus, it's basically me and the reporters. You know, and reporters like you have another life. You're doing all kinds of stuff. I don't have like staff reporters. People do what they do. Bonnie, who's on right before you, has her own radio show on Saturdays. So she does a lot of things she can report here. She can't report on that station because I don't care. I want the information. But it is. And I think Steve. The only reason he came on was he recognized what you and I recognize, that the progressives and the conservatives, or me. You know, I'm like I say, anti-federal. I make conservatives look like weenies. That we have more in common simply because we love our country more than we have differences. And the real enemy is the deep state that is trying to destroy this country.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. So this is, well, what do you think? Let me ask you before I know you got some other stories. Let me ask you about Robert Kennedy declaring as an independent because he cannot win in the Democrat Party. So the real problem is the Democrat Party. How is it that Bernie Sanders and Robert Kennedy, you know, classic Democrat, traditional Democrats, liberal Democrats, good Democrats, you know, I believe they believe what they believe. They're sincere. They're honest. They're honorable. I disagree, more so with Bernie. But that's okay. I have much more respect for Bernie and Robert Kennedy than I do a so-called Republican rhino. I never got to tell Steve what I call them. The GOP is on the gelding old party here. So,
No, you're absolutely right. And the thing is that, you know, like we've talked about before, you know, Biden is just down for the count. You know, I mean, everybody is just like kind of running for the exits right now.
Well, why is
White
he being
House.
Tolerated? The Democrats and the Republicans tolerating, and as far as I'm concerned,
because
you know, everybody knows that he didn't win.
It's the same. Why it's the same thing as it is. It's the same thing as it is with Feinstein, right? You know, the staffers are running the show, so now it's their day in the sun, so to speak.
Okay.
Even though they're doing it from behind the scenes, so that's why they're being tolerated because, you know, I believe it's their constitutional duty to 25th the guy, even though, you know, the result would be much worse. It'd be like a Kamala Harris presidency.
I don't think she'd be worse. But, I think she'd be just as bad, quite frankly. I don't think he could be
worse. Well, it's not good. The point is it's not going to be good.
Yeah, it's not.
And it's the same thing with Feinstein, too. It was just like, you know, she just kept, you know, clawing along to the end. And I don't think her staffers were you know, letting her do the right thing. They were just like, now we're in complete control of the situation. There's even stories on progressive media about, you know, one of Pelosi's daughter, her seldom heard from Corianne, was kind of moved into Feinstein's house. That's true. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of pulling the strings to her daughter. And I wouldn't put it past Pelosi at all. I mean, there's a reason why I was able to turn the archbishop against her. Okay. She's not a good person. So, there's definitely, you know, I saw on one of these conservative stations that they're like, well, Bobby's going to take away, you know, votes from Biden, but he's also going to take away votes from Trump, too. You know, keep in mind that people in 2016 who couldn't vote for Bernie Sanders didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. They voted for Donald Trump, and that's huge. That speaks volumes about what's going on in our society. You know, to sit there and go, I can't get Bernie Sanders, but I'm going to vote for a Republican. I'm going to go from voting in the far left to whatever Donald Trump is, right? So, and that says they're tired of the bullshit. They're tired. They want change. They don't want another deep state candidate who just spouts, you know, memes and tropes. But they want actual change because they're suffering. You know, these stats are real. 81% of the bottom 80% the bottom part of America owns just 7% of its wealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that used to be way, way, way lower, you know, like 20, 30 years ago.
The middle class is the way to prosperity.
Paycheck.
Yeah, middle class.
Yeah. And
Where people can take vacations and own cars and have one, you know, spouse working or the equivalent time that one spouse works, you know, that's the way to go. In lower taxes, you know, and a decent standard of living. And like I said,
well,
we have different ways
we
to
get
there.
But, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
realized that. Yeah, we have different ways. But the point is that you should be able to support, you know, a four-person family on the equivalent of one person working, whether it's two people working 20 hours or one working 40 or whatever. It doesn't matter. But you should have, you know, the equivalent of a family parent and a working parent. And they can switch over and however it's arranged. But if you have
Want to do it, but they should have the choice. They should have the choice. They don't have any choices anymore. This is the land of the free. How, you know, your ideas and $4 will get you a cafe latte at Starbucks. So
yeah,
it's really
time
not,
is freedom.
You know, that's,
you know, if you spend all your time working,
freedom.
You don't
exactly.
have freedom.
Money
yeah.
is freedom.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. And so and that's why, you know, we're not. You know, people like you and me, and hopefully, you know, more people from Steve's circles, we're not going to get sucked into these ridiculous tropes of theirs about abortion or changing the names of schools or statues. You know, we're going to focus on the money. We're going to attack these people at the core. We're not going to let them get away with it. I mean, I'm seeing it right here in San Francisco. That was a very dark day for me on the 23rd, but it was also a victorious day. Because we got them in a corner. There was no place they could hide. They couldn't blame their problems on Trump or the MAGAs. Mm-hmm. They couldn't, you know, take any other political refugee. They had to just admit that they were greedy, amoral people who didn't give a shit about the people in this city. So, and that, you know, we're going to be launching a huge thing from there. The campaign against Pelosi is going to be picking up. A lot of things are going to be happening, and
This is very exciting.
So, I wish Bobby well. I wish.
Yeah, I do too. I want him on the show. In fact, we had.
Yeah.
I sent you the show yesterday with Dr. Naomi Wolf, and I invited Dr. Judy Mikovits on. Those two are both experts in their field. They're both giants in their different fields. But I had a feeling they never talked. So I talked to Judy about that beforehand. So you listen to those two. You want to talk about interesting opportunities and people crossing over from completely different areas. They might be working together. Who knows? So that's kind of what we do here too. Is we bring people together.
I have
together
Trump advisors. Advising me. I have Trump, former Trump advisor. Yeah. And I also have some of AOC's former people too. And AOC has former Trump advisors on her payroll.
Really?
Too. So yeah, there's a lot of mix around going up.
So why are they doing that? Is it because they just like advising, or they actually, are they more cause oriented? Are they goal oriented or just job money oriented? That's just what they like doing.
Bit of both. I would say it's mostly cause oriented, but there is the self survival instinct in Washington. Okay, you know, you can't change the world if you can't pay the rent, so to speak. So
that's very true. Yeah.
I mean that's why you know, Fauci's been passed down since like Reagan or something like that.
Don't talk to Judy Mikovits about Fauci. She hates him.
Right.
And with good reason. He had her, you know, imprisoned. So it's gag orders and taking all her material. Oh yeah. Oh, so the story's incredible. So Judy, Judy's a friend. And so we talk all the time about stuff. But she's friends with Bobby Kennedy. because Bobby wrote the foreword to her book, Plandemic 3. So she's in contact with him. So I'm just like, Judy, can you get Bobby? You know, well, let me think about that, Greg. You know, it's like, I'll see what I can do. You know, it's that kind of thing because he's busy, right? But you never know. I mean, don't be surprised.
I'm working on it for you too. I'm in his. Yeah. I'm involved in his campaign.
Well,
you know, I'm on the finance committee.
Oh, perfect. But here's the thing, too.
Yeah.
You know, when I look at this, this is why I don't care about candidates. I don't care about people in office. That's not the big goal. You know, the big goal for me is to get the greatest freedom for the greatest number. And vaccine product liability is not something that is a Republican or a Democrat issue. It's a person issue. Why should this one industry be exempt from liability when my local donut shop, Milton Donuts, by the way, there's a little plug, has more liability for their donuts, you know, than Big Pharma has for multi-billion dollar, multinational corporate things they're calling vaccines. That's irrational to me. But that's not a Republican or Democrat issue. That's just a simple issue of self-preservation and actually 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law. One industry cannot be exempt from liability. That's actually unconstitutional. So when you look at it that way.
That's why we're trying to bring down Citizens United.
Yeah, I might disagree with you on that. I remember the case, but there's something. Well, in other words, can corporations spend money? Well, in the same way, parties. You know, I don't want parties spending money on politicians.
They can spend it,
but let's talk about that another time.
Give me
a warning so I can study up on it. But that's a good issue for us to discuss because I remember some the case. I just don't have the details in my head right now. But here's another one: big tech censorship. Okay, that doesn't help anybody except big tech invested heavily in big pharma. But we could have cured COVID. How many people lost people because they didn't know about hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin? Millions of people across this country know someone who, my webmaster, Eric Colley, died on a hospital ventilator after remdesivir.
Oh, God.
So this is personal to me.
That's brutal.
Okay? So every time I go to writeyourlaws.com, I think about my webmaster who was killed by a hospital. I know exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing. There's no doubt in my mind at all. And so, it's like almost like pay tribute to him every time I click on it. That's when it gets hacked and taken offline, which is done like about two times a week now. I get furious. But we found a way to bring it back immediately. So that's not that big an issue. But the point is that if we had full knowledge, see my article, the cure for COVID was freedom. If we had full information, freedom of information, there would have been no pandemic because there would have been no government response that created one. This is curable. So little things like that make profound changes. Here's the bill I think you'd love to promote. It's the no withholding of income while you're earning your standard deduction amount. So in other words, nobody's taxed on income until they've earned the $13,000, whatever it is, whatever the standard deduction is that year. So that way you don't, most people, because
that
won't.
Well, that seems like a
no-brainer. Yeah, but people won't have to file a tax return.
But, I've always been a fan of, pre-legislating. Uh-huh. I don't know why, candidates who are running for office say, can we agree on a bill that we would sign right now and post-date or whatever so that when we get elected, it comes into
law.
Well,
that's actually a good idea. No, that's really good.
They should pre-write
their bill.
Pre-legislate.
So tell us what bills you're going to be filing, spell it out, and if it's 2,000 pages of BS, then I'm not voting for you.
Yeah.
That seems pretty
and
simple
if,
to me.
And
that's,
if it works,
that's a really good
get,
idea.
Get all the parties to sign it. And then it goes automatically to the floor when they get elected. Yeah.
But I'd be happy if they just post the bills that they're willing to pass. Say, I want to post a bill on vaccine product liability, and people go, okay, well, we've already.
Well,
you got
to get their signature on it so they can't go back on it. Right.
Well, I have endorsements at the bottom of any. You should look at our bills. All our bills can be endorsed, and those get posts. Dr. Zelenko endorsed a couple of our bills. I mean, he's passed on now, but I've still got an endorsement because he was my friend. So I've gotten to know some amazing people.
I was the only Democrat to sign the pledge for term limits. That puts me right there with Ted Cruz and Matt Gaetz,
Are you sure you're progressive?
Because those guys signed it. That happens all the time. I get Republicans trying to turn me hey, why don't you come to this event? Do you know how I roll? No, I really am progressive. It's just there's issues that we have that we can work on again, and that's what I do. And, we did it during the recall. It was great. Yep. I mean, that was a chance. And believe me, they got really nasty at the recall. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was in – I attended, at least 50 meetings during that time period, Zoom meetings across the state, up and down the state, with Democratic parties and clubs. And they had a man there on every call saying, don't even think about getting into the governor race, or you're done, you're dead.
Seriously, really?
That's what they did. They had, yeah,
how democratic.
It was nasty, because exactly right. You know, it just shows who they really are, and the reason why is for the same reason I brought up that poll earlier. They didn't want, Democrats didn't want a Newsom administration anymore, who, by the way, is Pelosi's nephew, for those who don't know.
Yeah, that should be repeated often. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't want that anymore. They wanted a real Democratic government, not a Newsom, Democratic governor who just goes and has dinners with the French Laundry, in the middle of a pandemic without wearing his mask.
I've never been there, but that is one of the fanciest restaurants in California. You've got to wait a year to get in there. Right?
Napa
We're not
Valley.
Talking about just this isn't like Waffle House, folks. Okay, we're talking a serious restaurant here.
No, not the Waffle House. No, definitely not the Waffle House.
We don't have those in California, yet, do you? Or have they moved?
No, they don't. But
I got
they
a
have
Waffle
Denny's,
House.
Which are kind of dying out.
Waffle House
kind
is
of a shame because it was actually
like
pretty good value, I thought.
Hey, listen, after parties in college, Denny's. 4 a.m. Let's go. Yeah.
actually created a menu, an after dark menu, and it's like $2 more for everything.
Really?
I was like, get out of here. Like,
no,
yes,
we used
I think
to go
that
to,
was
in fact,
the idea.
We had a place.
They're drunk and desperate, and it's the only place that's open. So
right.
There you go. But yeah, with that said, I gotta go too.
Okay. Contact information?
Bianca for SanFrancisco.org. That's how we beat Pelosi. We're training at-risk youth. Send however much you can. $20 would be nice. There's a give button on there. Also you can just Google Bianca Von Krieg, VonKrieg, and you'll see all my links and all clips from all my movies and things. Don't watch those, but please support us. We're trying to fight the good fight, and we really want people from across the nation to give us money so that Pelosi will see it on that report that she gets, every quarter. It prints up and it says, seeing like people from like Tennessee and Florida and West Virginia giving like $20 to end
that
vile woman.
We should get on with Steve Bannon. See if Steve Stern can get you on with Steve Bannon. I mean, I want to get him to get me to meet Trump. But so why not?
We talk to all those people, and Steve is the only guy who is cool.
He's smart, and he's been around. He's 82 years old, so Steve understands the dynamics of all this. He's seen parties come and go. He's seen people come and go. Causes come and go. Fads come and go. And he realizes that most Americans are basically good people, and that we don't have to agree on everything. But as long as you're for the country, then the rest of it we can figure out. But there are those. But the real enemy is those who hate the country, who are opposed to this country, who want to destroy this country for their own selfish reasons, or are making money off this country, making money off death, making money off war, making money off the central bank, the Fed. I don't think Steve realized it, but that constitutional amendment would get rid of the Fed. It would overrule the Federal Reserve Act. So there's a lot
I'm
of
sure
things
he'd
in
like
there.
Something like that.
It's a really powerful bill.
So,
Anyway,
that's the Progressive Report for this Wednesday, October 11th, and we will see you folks next week.
Thank you again. I really appreciate you bringing Steve on. That was fabulous, and I appreciate your report. We'll talk to you next week.
More to come. More to come. I'm working on more.
You bet.
All right.
Thanks, Bianca.
Have a good week.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Take care. All right. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at strikeforceenergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
I still love that. That was actually made before the 2020 elections that were stolen. And Bianca and I disagree with that, and that's okay. This has been a fascinating day, from Bill to Wendy to Bonnie to Bianca to Steve. I really appreciate everybody that was on the show today. This was incredible. And tomorrow we've got Jason Shepherd back, Jason Shepherd, who has Wimkin Social Media, and I'll be telling him all about the stuff we're doing here. This is just unbelievable. I'm really happy. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow morning. At 7 a.m. Central Time, we got 2 free hours, and we got Jason. So we have a lot of time to catch up on news, things that we're talking about, Obama, Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and different things like that. I'll be presenting the American arms from the Taliban that Brandon surrendered to the Taliban for no reason and have ended up in the hands of Hamas, killing Americans and everybody else. Lots to talk about. It's going to be a busy day. And then Friday, of course, Friday is a busy day, too. We've got – let me look at my calendar real quick. We've got our usual folks. We've got Tara D with the Animal Shelter Report. We've got Derek Park with the Financial Report. We've got a special guest. Actually, 8 o'clock, I don't know. Oh, at 8 o'clock, we have our two new gun reporters, Candy Petticard and John Delmonico. And so they're going to be both busy. So I've got like 4 reports in a row on Friday. And then I have a special guest, Jenna McCarthy. Jenna McCarthy wrote a book with Dr. Pierre Corey on ivermectin, the wonder drug. So it's busy. It's always busy here. That's just what we do. I'm going to leave you with a little Beethoven to send you on your way, and I will talk to you again tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time, when we do it all again. ¶¶